Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Every once in a while I make a mistake on the show. Well, not on the show itself, but I managed to leave my water, you know, way across the counter. And I got to set up my microphone. I found this out about 5 seconds before the show started. So maybe I'll just let Bill ramble on for like a minute while I race across the counter and get it again. Yeah, it's no fun. Well, I think I can last for his report. Let me get two. Oh, see, this is how unprepared I am today. Ah, here it is.
On tight, Action Radio presents the Fetke Report.
Good morning, Action Radio Land. I'm so glad to be back in the world of Greganomics. How you doing today?
Yeah, it's kind of a slow news day, though, Bill. What are we going to talk about today?
Oh, I don't know. You know, here in the Gulf Coast, we have more than just national news going on. We have a whole bunch of ripples in the way in the water, and it all stems from Washington, D.C.
Ripples on the coast? Ooh,
ripples on the coast.
What a nice metaphor to start our Wednesday. Thank you, sir.
Let's go back. I reported 3 years ago, I think, maybe 2 years ago at this point, where I reported that Matt Gaetz was very unhappy about being in Washington, D.C.
Huh.
This is good. Yeah, he wasn't very happy. People didn't like him, and he didn't like them.
People on radio don't like me. I know exactly how he feels.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah.
So, there's a lot going on, and there's talk for a very long time, for the last 2 years, that he would run for governor here after Ron DeSantis finished up his term. Mm-hmm. A lot of people dismissed it. Some people thought he would actually run in 2022 for governor. There's a lot of rumors about that going around. But now let's fast forward here. A local man who was our House of Representatives in District 2 for the state House in District 2 was Frank White a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. He ran after one term for Attorney General, ended up losing. He filed for state Senate here in our local District 1. Mm-hmm. Frank White is the son-in-law of a very prominent businessman here in town. Who owns many car dealerships, well-respected, very nice man.
Okay, name names. Come on, you name names. This is public.
Well, okay. And so Sandy Sansing is a very well-known person in this area, in our panhandle here. He owns many car dealerships. One in Milton with Bubba Watson, the golfer. He also owns many here in Pensacola. Well, his son-in-law, who's a lawyer, had a very successful first term, got, in my opinion, a little bit greedy after one term in the state house, ran for attorney general, lost barely, but he did lose. And he's been kind of quiet the last couple years. He put his hat in the race for state Senate, and mysteriously withdrew earlier this week. No one could figure out why he withdrew. A couple hours later,
sex scandal coming or something? I mean, does he have something to do with farm animals or what?
No. A couple hours later, Matt Gaetz's dad.
Sorry, that was a joke.
Matt Gaetz's hello.
Okay, go ahead.
Matt Gaetz's dad, Don Gaetz, who's a longtime state senator for 10 years in the Florida House. Yeah, one of the most powerful men in Florida. He also has the key to the safe for the Triumph Gulf Coast Funds, which if people are not familiar with that, that's from the BP oil spill. And yes, that money still hasn't been distributed after how many years. And so Don Gaetz decided he is going to run for state senate in District 1.
Which is Frank White's district. Right.
Correct. And that's why Frank White stepped down. I'm assuming in 2026 Frank will run for Congress or something like that with Don Gates' backing.
Against Matt Gaetz? Where is he going to run from?
No.
They're all in the same district.
Okay, well, let me finish putting together the story for you.
Okay.
All right, so Don Gates, very powerful man, okay?
Right.
So he is 75 years old. He's had some health issues recently. Mm-hmm. So why would he want to get back in the game?
Yeah,
there's
a really
couple reasons. Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a very valid question. So let's go back to what I started off the program with Matt Gaetz not being happy in D.C., doesn't like D.C. D.C. doesn't like him. He came out 2 years ago. You know, like I said, he teased a governor run a couple years ago. He teased it again earlier this year that he made a comment in
passing at an event.
He's
not governor material. There's a big difference between legislators and executives. He's a legislator. He is not an executive. Legislators are flamboyant speeches and great oratory and philosophical stuff. And administrators are supposed to be boring, you know, people to get things done, and they make decisions, you know, within the law. But they don't create the law. The creation is the legislator. So he's more of a creator and a legislator than he is a governor, for the same reason that DeSantis, I don't think, was a great member of Congress necessarily, but he was pretty good. He's a pretty good governor, you know, president yet. But yeah. But does that make sense, that split as to who can do what? It's not a transferable position. Trump would make a terrible legislator. He'd be horrible.
Correct. Correct.
But he makes a really good president.
Yeah. I agree with everything you say. But it doesn't matter because this is what's going to happen.
No.
There's a reason why.
Okay, fine.
Bill. there's a reason why Don Gates is running for state senate, and he's going to win state senate.
Oh,
is
okay.
Because Matt is coming home. He is going to run for governor, but he doesn't have the stroke in this state. So
stroke?
He needs.
Ooh, that's like an inside political word, isn't it? Explain. Money,
he doesn't
power,
have the power,
influence. What's that?
Well,
go ahead.
He doesn't. Now, Dad does, but he doesn't.
Huh.
No, you know, Dad was known as a bully in the state senate, and he always got his way through many different means, depending who you talk to. Some will say negotiating, some will say bullying, but once again, Dad has control of that Triumph Golf Coast money. So there's twofold, you know, the conspiracy theorists and some of the insiders will say, well,
ongoing investigations.
He's doing it.
Sorry, Bill.
Yeah. Well, you're right. He's trying to avoid investigation into why that money hasn't been spent yet.
Oh, where's the interest? The money is somewhere earning interest, isn't it? I mean, where is that money?
Well, you know, that is the million-dollar question, and any time anyone brings it up, you kind of get that roundabout answer, well, there's administration costs and blah, blah, blah.
No. This is traceable.
Yeah.
I mean, they have to pay they have to account for it. It has to be tax-paid. It has to be – there's got to be oversight on that money. There's got to be, some kind of a state commission that's responsible.
Exactly.
You can't just hide it. And if they're not
–
if they're hiding it, then the attorney general goes after them. So where's the money?
Okay, so this is where the stroke comes in. You have Don Gates, one of the most powerful men that people are literally afraid of because he knows where the bodies are buried.
Oh.
So by him going back into the state Senate, now you have him to be able to orchestrate all around the state to help and kind of get people to help Matt in areas where Matt is weak. In the South, especially the South Florida Republicans, who are a little bit more rhinos anyways. So that's where Don Gates comes in and why he is running for state senate.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Now, I know Don Gates was responsible for helping Matt get into the legislature in the first place, right? Because Matt was pretty young when he was a state representative, wasn't he? 20-something?
Exactly.
How old was he?
I would say 26, 28, 26, 27, something like that.
So he would have been early 30s when he started Congress, maybe, or was he still in his 20s?
I want to say 35, 36 when he started Congress.
because he looked younger. That was, but that's before the hair gel, though. So, you know, he didn't look like Eddie Munster, you know, grown up. So,
He
looked like,
Jack
a real person.
I think he looks like Jack Nicholson.
Personally. Yeah, I can see that, too. Yeah, that's funny. We got to get him on the show again just so we can tell him all our humor. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what's going on here. Now, as far as what Matt did with Kevin McCarthy, brilliant. Uh-huh. Love it. I think it was awesome.
Uh-huh.
But the underlying story that maybe because of it, and not saying it is, but you know, a couple of years ago, the Department of Justice opened up an investigation into Matt about sexual allegations.
Oh, yeah, they did with all Republicans. That, we joked about that, remember? You know, that's why I made the fun of him. Do you know where that came from? Do you know that's actually kind of a funny story. Pianchi was on the line, and we're talking about, I said, you know, one day when I get famous, I'm going to have an obligatory sex investigation. And Pianchi says, yeah, it'll probably involve farm animals. And we just all cracked up. It was hysterical. So I still remember that. Anyway. But yeah, so everybody gets one. Jim Jordan had one for no reason. Trump's had a bunch.
And they all go away after the election.
Yeah, go ahead.
It did not technically go away. It went away in the public eye, but behind the scenes, Kevin McCarthy was still trying to.
Mr. McDeep State.
Mr. McDeep State was still trying to do this. So there is some people who do believe that the reason why Matt brought this up and tried to cause more of a retaliation type of tactic because Kevin McCarthy was doing this.
I don't believe that. I'll tell you why, because he's got Trump's backing. So, and he went through that before. He went through that investigation. It was all a bunch of nonsense. And so I don't see that. I think he's going after McCarthy for the reasons that he says he's going after from McCarthy. McCarthy's a lying, cheating, deep state plant. You know, he's the next Paul Ryan. He's the next John McCain and Mitt Romney. He is as bad as we all thought he was. He did exactly what we predicted he would do, which was that he would violate all his promises and be a deep state, operative. Because he's been in leadership for too long. You look at him, you know, looking fondly upon, John Boehner, one of those famous pictures. He's been he's at the heart of the deep state. He's done nothing about the stolen election. He's done nothing about a variety of things, which we'll talk about. Bonnie's not here in the next hour. So in my article, you know, I wrote why I'm not voting for Republicans until they fix certain things. The most important being that McCarthy did was that secret deal with Brandon on the economy and eliminating the debt ceiling. You can't do that. The Speaker of the House cannot constitutionally make a deal with the president because presidents don't legislate. You don't make deals. You know, you can trade for like bills once they're established, but that bill has to go to Congress first. And nothing ever got out of Congress. He goes, you know, to Brandon, hat in hand, to an illegal occupant of the White House, and comes back with an illegal deal. Well, that's why he got ousted. That's why he gets ousted.
Well, no, I mean,
because he's a traitor.
I agree. I agree totally. I'm just letting you know what insiders are saying. Okay?
Oh, I know what they're saying. I watched it last night.
Yeah.
But here's my take real quick. All right, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say is that, no, I mean, everything that he stated is accurate 100%. And Kevin McCarthy should have been kicked out. In fact, he should have never been voted in to begin with.
That's
if
what we're saying.
If it takes you 18, 20 times, whatever it was, to get enough votes, no one likes you.
Yeah.
And
well, do you remember our shows?
The only way he got in was selling your soul.
Yeah, do you remember when it was happening? And we said, don't let him in. He's only going to betray everything that he's agreeing to now. He's only saying that to get in. We said that. We were absolutely right. Again, we have a pretty good track record here of being right on a lot of these things. But we knew this was going to happen. We knew it was inevitable as soon as he took office because we knew he was going to cheat and lie and go right back to the deep state. Now, here's my question, though. This is what the most interesting and disgusting part of this whole thing. I'm watching news last night, and One American News wasn't so bad, but Newsmax was hopelessly kowtowing and catering because Chris Ruddy, who runs Newsmax, hates Donald Trump, and he hates anybody that supports Donald Trump. And of course, Matt Gaetz is one of his biggest backers, right? And so every single Republican that they interviewed, you know, they never interviewed the eight people or the seven people that voted along with Matt Gaetz. I didn't hear any of them on. All I heard were the whining, whimpering, disgusting weenie baby butt wipes that has become the GOP geldings. It's a term from my flight instruction book. But that's exactly what's going on. They're a bunch of weenie baby butt wipes. that have no business in Congress. They have no guts, no spine, no substance whatsoever. And they were saying, oh, this is terrible for the country. It's like Kevin McCarthy died and Matt Gaetz killed him. That's what it sounds like. Oh, I can't believe he's gone. Oh, this is a terrible thing for the country. Whoa, whoa, whoa. It's like the remember Lost in Space? Might be a bit before your time.
Yeah.
Dr. Smith?
I remember.
Doomed. Yep. We're all doomed.
So I'm going to disagree with you about Newsmax a little bit. And the reason why is Matt Gaetz is on every Friday night on Newsmax. You know, first of all. Second of all, if he's not on, Luke Ball, who was Matt Gaetz's assistant for a lot of years.
I know Luke pretty well.
Well, I know, but most of the people who are listening don't.
Well, he's on More American News all the time now.
He's on Newsmax all the time also.
Oh, is that interesting?
And then, you know, as far as I only watch Newsmax, for whatever reason, my Roku only shows replays on One American News, so I don't get live stuff.
You gotta subscribe.
I don't know why.
You got to subscribe to us. $5 a month. Yeah, they're a subscription.
Okay, so that's
they got banned by so many networks, they can't get the free service. But you do, it's worth it because that's most where I get a lot of my news from anyway.
So yeah. I watch Newsmax. Uh-huh. And Newsmax, I actually have to turn it off sometime because I don't get the other side. I get always the pro-Trump side. And it's almost ad nauseum sometimes to the fact that I'm like, I just, everybody, Eric Bolling, the guy before him, I can't remember his name.
Rob
off
Schmidt.
Top of my head,
yeah.
I really.
So, the only three that are worth listening to are Carl Higbee, Rob Schmidt, and Eric Bolling, because they are pro-Trump, and they actually talk about the election being stolen, sort of, not completely, because Chris Reuter would fire them if they actually said that. But the rest of them are a bunch of, leftist, Republican, weenie baby, butt wipe, geldings. So those are the only three worth listening to.
Isn't that what you're supposed to do with the news, though, is kind of have opinions from both sides? Which they still don't have opinions on the Democrat side, which is fine.
No, not at all.
But,
The idea of objective journalism is hysterically funny. There's no such thing. You look at most of the cities back, and I got Pianca on. Pianca, I'll get you in just a second. You look at most of the cities around the country years and years ago, and they had newspapers. They had a morning newspaper, a midday newspaper, and sometimes an evening newspaper. They'd have three or more newspapers per city, and each one of them had a perspective. You had your conservative papers. You had, like Boston, where I grew up. You had the Boston Globe was liberal. The Boston Herald American was conservative. So you got both sides. So news organizations have a point of view. So the idea of being objective is absurd. So they should go with their point of view. You know, the Washington Post is liberal. The Washington Times is conservative. Everybody knows that. So that's good. Go ahead.
Okay. I understand what you're saying. I disagree. But I think the news should present both cases and let you decide for yourself.
No, but each agency can present their own case.
I did let you know last night, Greg, that I do have to cut you short today. I do have a conference call. I got to go yell at an insurance company. Next week, we're going to have a long discussion about how COVID changed customer service in this country for the way worse.
Yeah, I remember that, but you're on such a rant right now. Well, let me give you
a I got to continue this rant with the insurance company because they've been doing me wrong. So I do have to get going onto a conference call. So, yeah, we kind of ruined that one today. so I will go earn my dollar for today, and we will continue this rant next week. I'm just glad McCarthy is out, and you guys have a good rest of the show.
Well, yeah, another minute. Okay, fine. Thanks, Bill. I guess he had to go early. All right, so now that I'm playing America the Beautiful, let's rant national. So we have a problem in this country. We have a deep state. We have a government that is illegal. We have a bunch of weenie baby butt wipes supporting the government that's illegal. A good thing happened yesterday. One of the top echelon of the deep state, of the people that believe in the nation of government and not America, got his butt kicked. And he got kicked out of the speakership. Hopefully he'll leave Congress completely. Anyway, let's get to Bianchi and see what he says. Yeah, I thought Bill had like till 7:20, but apparently he only had till 7:18. So that's okay. Thanks, Bill. We'll catch you next week. That's where he's talking faster. Hey, Bianchi, what do you think?
Well, a lot of these people need to be gone. Greg.
I think I've been saying that. Yeah, agreed. Yeah,
You've been better with your predictions.
Oh, thank
more
you.
More accurate, more on time.
Well, yeah, experience. you do it enough times. You know, I've been watching politics since I was, you know, 12 years old when I first got to this country. My first experience with American politics was Watergate. And here I'm watching Congress, you know, impeach a president. I thought, this is an interesting country. This is exciting. I like this place. So anyway, yeah. But do you remember our conversations about Kevin McDeepstate? I mean, I called him McDeepstate right from the start, as soon as he was being talked about as the potential speaker. I knew it was a mistake. I could see it coming. He was exactly in the vein of Klein. He was going to do exactly the same things. He was going to make sure the Republicans never acted like Republicans. He was going to be a total traitor to this nation and our principles and our individual rights and our economics and the national debt and everything else. And he proved me right. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, the only reason I tend to vote Republicans is because their platforms are things that I support and would like to see done. But the people that's in these parties aren't worth the salt and bread, I don't think. But, Greg, you know, it goes back, and I hate to keep saying it goes back to the people themselves. They let this exist.
Well, you've got people voting for idiots. You know, this is why democracy is so dangerous. And not that I would want their vote removed, but we've got to change the way that we elect people. The first thing I would do is remove the parties. You know, a nation cannot be – well, here's a question for you. Do you think that a nation would be truly free if it has political parties?
Well, you know, political parties are allowed to exist. They can get to the greatest extent or the least extent. Anyone can start them if you meet the qualifications, of course. And especially on a local level, they tend to operate a little bit better because they're in the face of people, but yet and still they're not operating as good as they should.
See, I don't think I'm rapidly coming to the conclusion. Go ahead. I'm sorry. What were you going
to
say?
All this goes back to the citizens, Greg. Then guess what? You talk about government schools. I talk about government schools. I don't want to see them all get done away with because some of them are good. But whether they're good or bad, it's up to who. It gets back to the same one. And I don't know how you change that. I really don't.
Well, full school choice is the way you do it. So the money that is collected for education doesn't go to government. It goes to people. And they will spend that money as they see fit. And whether ballet lessons, flying lessons, the debate team, you know, individual coaching, SAT classes, or a government school or a private tutor or a home school, that's up to parents. You know, it's also up to individuals. In fact, it's up to anybody that pays taxes. It's not just parents, but those vouchers should be given to everybody so that they can donate to the schools. Yeah.
But you know, the greatest thing that is quite obvious lurking on the horizon is this U.S. debt, the deficit, the interest on the debt. And, Greg, if you brought your plane in for an annual, which you have to do once a number of hours have been accumulated, and the mechanic brings back to you a written report, and it looks like the U.S. debt, well, the only thing you can do with that plane is scrap it.
I don't think your analysis and metaphor exactly apply. I would think that if the mechanic comes back and says you need a whole bunch of repairs and you go to your credit card company and say you have to raise my limit $100,000 because I need repairs on my airplane, and they say, well, you don't qualify for that. I said, it doesn't matter. I'm going to spend it anyway. That would be closer. That would be more realistic.
Yeah, that's closer.
Yeah, yeah. That was a good start. So let's think about this for a minute, because let's think back about 3 or 4 months when I went to a Matt Gaetz rally, and this is an old place called Jay, Florida, is the northern part of Santa Rosa County. It's mostly peanut and cotton farms, and so it's very agricultural, but very rural. A lot of rednecks out there. You know, you get the guys in pickup trucks, you know, they go hunting, you know, in the spare time. So this is that kind of place. It's really great. You know, so again, my apologies to my redneck brethren. But he spoke up there, and he had a rally. And there was this Scott's outdoor place, and the Scott family owns everything. There's like 5 new businesses with Scott on them, so they pretty much run this town, right? So we're up there, and they had stands, they had like a bleacher thing, and Matt Gaetz asked for questions. And of course, I put my hand up and pretty much stand up and start walking down in front. And I presented him in person in front of hundreds of people who were videoing, and the news was there and everything, with our bill, our constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money. And I want to try and explain it to him, or at least talk to him later about it, which is what I ended up doing. And Matt Gaetz takes it and then looks at the crowd and says, well, this is Greg. He never lets realism get in the way of a good idea. And ha, 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 ho, 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 he, he. That was really funny. However, once again, I was right. You know, that is the answer. That is the only answer, because unless you stop these people borrowing money, they're going to keep borrowing money. These people are crack addicts, and their crack is money, and it's not even their money. It's our money. They are addicted to spending our money, and the only way to stop this, not a balanced budget amendment, because that has an escape clause. It has a couple of them, pandemics, wars, you know, national emergencies. It's got three escape clauses, so it'll never work, because you will always have a pandemic, a war, or a national emergency. So you can't use that. The only way to stop them borrowing money is to stop them borrowing money. Now, I'm going to write Matt Gaetz because, you know, he knows the national debt's the big problem. He said so in a couple of press conferences yesterday. So then the question becomes, does he think that my crazy idea is so crazy anymore? It's really not. It's really a very logical way out, because not only does it get rid of Congress borrowing money, it eliminates inflation. It gets rid of all central banks and the ability of Congress to create a central bank, because that bank would be unconstitutional. Well, that gets rid of the Fed. It overrides the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. It stops the government from owning securities, and it's the owning of securities that they use to pay for, you know, and I'm not sure exactly how it all works, but they use securities. The government buys securities with money they don't have, so they print money to buy those securities. Well, that printing of money goes into the economy and increases the money supply, and that's what causes inflation. So if you stop Congress borrowing money, you stop forever inflation. Oh, yeah, prices will still go up and down with supply and demand, but they won't go up and down because of inflation. They won't go up and down because the government screwed around money supply. So if you look at it, this is the answer to our economic problems. This is the answer to the national debt, because every year, Treasury bills, notes, bonds mature. And as they mature, Congress is legally bound to pay them off, and they do. And they also have to pay off the interest. And every year, you're going to have fewer and fewer Treasury bonds bills out there because they're not making any more. So every year the interest is going to go down. So every year the national debt goes down. And this keeps going until the national debt and the interest on the national debt are completely gone. Derek Park, our financial guru, figures about 30 or 40 years for that to be completely paid off. Pretty interesting, huh?
Yeah, we won't be around to see the end.
Well, I don't know. I hope it's around 30 years. 40 years, I don't know about. So I'm going to be 64 next month. So y'all have to sing when I'm 64 instead of happy birthday. Okay, this is the one time you get to do that.
Anything is better than nothing that's going on now.
Yeah.
If you stop increasing to the debt, yes, mm-hmm. That's a good thing. You can't be working on the debt and mm-hmm. at the same time you are increasing the debt. Well, mm-hmm. that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but
so that which contribute to it has to stop. And yeah. then it has to be addressed. But it's going to mm-hmm. take a long time. And then you're going to have to cut things out. I mean, the numbers, too. If you look at the way to this, you look at the revenue,
mm-hmm.
that's what you got coming in. So mm-hmm. if what you got coming in mm-hmm. and what you owe is 20 times than what you got coming in, well, mm-hmm. it just ain't going to work. Not in an appreciable yeah. amount of time. You have to stop something.
What you've got, like I say, they have to pay off the Treasury bills when they mature. They have to. So every time, so the national debt is owned mostly to American citizens who bought Treasury bills, bonds, and notes. That's to fund the national debt. That's what they're for. So as those get paid off, which Congress is duty bound to do, otherwise we would default, right? Then the national, they have the money.
You know what the national debt is?
$33 trillion.
You know what the national debt is?
Yeah, it's about $33 trillion.
September the 30th was the end of the fiscal year.
Right.
Okay, if October of 2022, when they set a budget, they mm-hmm. had $5 billion. And then if September the 3rd, they had spent $10 billion, that mm-hmm. $5 billion goes into the deficit column, which goes to the debt.
Right.
That's
so the deficit is
created.
Yearly. Yeah, deficit is yearly, the amount that they borrow above what they take in revenue. So the revenue is about $5 trillion, right?
If the deficit is what they spend, they can borrow. Maybe they don't spend it, but the deficit
No, that's not quite true. The deficit is the difference between how much revenue comes in, $5 trillion roughly, and how much they actually spend, usually $6 or $7 trillion. So they're spending $1 to $2 trillion above what they're taking in. That's the deficit. Now, that $1 to $2 trillion per year gets added to the national debt, so it's now up to 33.
The deficit is when you spend more than what's budgeted.
Well, or no, it's when you spend more than you have for revenue. That's what the national debt.
It's when you spend more than what's budgeted. When you make the budget, you don't know what the revenue is going to be. I mean, it's just like a credit card. You go.
Yeah, I see what
you
see. What you're saying,
you know,
at the end of the day, you know, when once they figure out how much money they have and if how much they've spent above that, yeah, that's why they should spend less than they think they're going to take, and they'll set.
That's
what
the budget
Wendy.
Is all about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we can continue this next hour. Let's say, well, Bonnie's not here, so we got the whole next hour, but I got a bunch of things I want to talk about. So we're going to have some fun in that time. But in the meantime, we've got this. Oh, where'd it go? My computer moved. Let's try that one more time. Here we go. Do you really want the truth? Do you have questions you can't ask in church? Welcome to the Oh My God Report. Wendy Arthur is more concerned with truth than propaganda, putting more value in scripture than religion, and more about you and your relationship with God than your membership in any church. This is Christianity with a Kick. Yes, welcome to our very calm and relaxed morning, because there's nothing to talk about, so we're just sitting around here bored.
Okay. Well, good morning, Bianchi. It's good to hear you.
Oh, Bianchi just left. Yeah, Bill left. Bianchi left. Everybody's leaving this morning. Maybe it's a hint. Glad you're here.
Okay.
Yeah, Bonnie can't make it either. She's got stuff to do, so it's going to be a quiet morning. Yeah. But, yeah, so, no, we've just been going over the debt, and Bill was talking about Matt Gaetz and you know, our dear congressman. So it's been an interesting morning so far. So what's God think of all this?
It has been an interesting morning, you know, because what's going on is, you know, and people had speculated about this last year, about Trump coming in as a Speaker of the House.
No, he's not going to come in as Speaker of the House. Why would he do that when he can be president? The only, and I posted this on Facebook last night, that the only people who want him to
be president after that.
What's that?
I said he can be president after that.
We can be.
No.
See, I don't buy this. Here's the problem. If he's Speaker of the House, first of all, he's not going to be Speaker of the House. And if he were Speaker of the House, he couldn't do anything because the deep state would gang up on him. They'd love him to be Speaker of the House. That would be fabulous. But he's not going to fall into that trap. You know, he wants to be president. He's like I say, he's one pissed off hombre, and he's going to go clean house. But he's going to do it the old-fashioned way. He's going to actually win the election. Okay, and so then when he becomes president, things will be very different. But I do not see him as becoming speaker. Why would he become speaker? He's been a CEO all his life. Speaker is not a CEO. You know, speaker's at the beck and call of the parties, of the members, unless you're Nancy Pelosi and you just, you know, wield unusual, you know, dictatorial cultish power over your party. But Republicans don't do that. In fact, most of them are Democrats anyway. So, no, I don't see him becoming speaker. But tell me what you think.
I didn't say he was going to be speaker. I said he could be, because that's what people had been talking about trying to do. But no, I don't think it's going to happen in any way that we think, including elections. So,
okay.
But that's just me.
No, it's not just you. No, it's not just you. There's a lot of people that feel exactly the same way. I got Josie telling me every week that Trump's going to come in with a military coup and take over and fix everything. It's like, no, he's not. This is not how this country works. So I have all kinds of things that I hear.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's going to be by military coup, although I think they'll be on standby. But there's just so much stuff that's coming out as far as proof that it will be absolutely impossible to ignore. But, you know, however God chooses to do it, he said that Trump is his trumpet and he's going to be back in. So however God chooses to do it, that's you know, I'm just getting popcorn and I'm going to sit back and watch the show.
Oh, I'm fascinated by what's happening. You know, first thing, you know, this has been a big week. Dianne Feinstein passed away. We had Congressman carjacked. You know, we've had McCarthy got kicked out of the speakership. Things are getting interesting out there.
Yes.
You know, and
so.
And
we had the Disney Princess Castle burned down.
You tell me about that. I'm not as familiar with that story.
I saw that on a headline a few days ago, you know, that the castle in Disney had caught on fire and burnt. So
Princess Castle.
I don't care enough.
Yeah. Is that what the drag queens perform in Disneyland
or
what?
Castle. Well, and then right following, you know, three employees got arrested for child sex trafficking. Imagine that. So.
Of course, Disneyland. That's what Disney's in the business of. You know, they're a porn place, drag queen place, and they support all the left wing causes. I would be surprised if there weren't more people involved in child sex trafficking at Disneyland or World.
Oh, there are.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So where's Ashley Moody? Where's the Attorney General? How come she's falling down on the job?
Because she's part of the problem. So,
okay.
We're going to be seeing a whole lot of stuff coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just going to wait and see. Because God promised, he's been saying for 2 years, people, 2 years, that you better repent, you better get right, because there's coming a time when he's going to start exposing. Well, here we are.
Yep, exactly. 10-4, Wendy. Oh, speaking of which, this is 10-4.
Yes,
sorry, couldn't resist.
Are we ready for the government surveillance system?
Well, see, this is what I see too. The government already has a surveillance system. You don't think they don't listen to the show? Of course they do. So I want to welcome the members of the FBI, KGB, to once again call the show. Be men, don't be weenies. 215-383-3832. And if you're going to come invade my home, at least give me some warning so I can make coffee. We can talk like civilized people. Okay. So there we go. That's my standard FBI KGB disclaimer. But yeah, the government already surveils us. They're already in the phone calls.
Well,
they're already, getting social media to give them everything. So how can they, this is going to make them better, but it's not going to change anything, And I'll be curious to see what happens.
No, it's not. It's not even about surveillance. It's not about surveillance. It's about checking reactions. Because you have to remember, the enemy's camp operates on fear, intimidation, and threats.
Yeah. Well, they know the reactions. The Karens get out there and wear masks and they scream at people. And people live in fear, and they drive with their car windows up with masks on, suffocating themselves, and then cause accidents. They're idiots. So we got at least one-third of this country complete and total idiots.
Well, I'm just saying that this is not just to test the emergency broadcast system, and any thinking person knows that. But anyway, so my phone will be in my car when all that happens. I'm not going to even have it in the house.
I'll be asleep.
I don't
want to
hear
nap
all
time
that
for me. So
yeah.
I don't care.
But anyway, and it's at 2:20 Eastern time, people. So 1:20 Central, and just whatever your time frame is.
Oh, lunchtime. Gotcha.
Throw it outside for a while.
Yeah. I'll watch my phone and see what
this
explodes.
Morning.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I doubt it. But I wanted to talk about something that God's been putting on my heart about the sin of presumption. And because it's akin to pride, when you presume something that it's okay with God, or this is the way we've always done it, so you just go on presumption that you will continue doing it the way it's always been done.
Oh,
and never inquiring of the Lord as to what he wants done in this hour. That's what kept Moses out of the promised land. After being raised up and going through all he went through to free the Israelites from Pharaoh and his control and his slavery of them, and having to put up with complaining, whining, hinies for 40 years.
Boy, Moses, what are you talking about?
We're
sitting in the desert all this time. You got to give us a promised land. What are you doing? I need the rabbi or something. What's going on, Moses? Okay, fine. Go ahead. Sorry.
there's a saying that says, if you complain, you remain. And that is, from watching the Israelites. Because
that is so true.
An 11-day trip took 40 years.
Wait. Slow down.
Because they did nothing but complain.
Okay, this is critical. All right, so tell me. Yeah, I always wonder what the 40 years was all about. So this is key for me. So tell me. 11 days?
Well, because, it should have taken them 11 days to get from where they were in Egypt to the promised land in Canaan.
And they were walking, right? Walking.
Yeah, they were all walking, and they had their cattle and their donkeys and their tents and their food supplies and all that kind of stuff. But actually, they didn't even have their food supplies because they left Egypt in such a hurry. But they did take their household belongings with them and plundered them on the way out, by the way. Got the gold and silver, just handed over to them on the way out. God caused them, you know, the Egyptians to do that. So here they are out in the middle crossing the desert, and it should have taken 11 days. And no, it took 40 years, and God provided them manna from heaven. And he calls manna angels' food, yet they complained. They didn't have to cook it. They didn't have to gather it. All they had to do was step outside, and there was manna for them every morning, miraculously provided. But it was only good for one day at a time. And so every day they had this miracle. Well, and then so they got used to the miracle happening. They used to just, you know, got used to walking outside and gathering up what they needed and
like
eating
welfare.
It. But, you know, yeah, but here they are complaining that God was providing manna. Well, at least back in Egypt, we had leeks and onions and garlic. Apparently they weren't a real thing. It's like a sweet bread manna is. And they decided that they should have a varied buffet instead of what God was providing for them. It was only supposed to take 11 days, but they complained about absolutely everything. They had the pillar of smoke by day to lead them. They had a pillar of fire by night to lead them. Nobody today gets to say that. You know, they had wonderful miracles happening for them every day, but they complained about absolutely everything. So this is what happened. So what took what should have taken 11 days?
Sounds like my Greek family. They complained about everything too.
Yeah.
It's tradition.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah.
So anyway,
Greeks, Italians, Jews, there's not that much difference, actually. It's really kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. God, over 40 years, their clothes never wore out and their shoes never wore out.
Okay,
that's
so let's do a little,
you're literally a walking miracle.
Let's do a little quick. Let's do a little quick math here. Let's be optimistic and say they could make 10 miles a day, which is pretty optimistic. All right, so we're talking 11 days. We're talking about 110
miles.
Yeah,
with thousands of people. Yeah.
Yeah. So 10 miles a day. I mean, with horses and the whole bit. So if they're doing, you know, cattle, the whole. If they make 10 miles a day, they're doing well. We could say less, but just for the sake of argument.
It'd be a miracle. Yeah.
So that's 110 miles. How far is it from Egypt to Japan? How far was it?
I don't know. I'll have to Google map that.
Yeah, let's do that. I'm serious. This is kind of interesting now, because it's always interesting to compare biblical scripture to actual places. I mean, we know these places exist, right?
Yeah.
So where did the Jews escape from? Are we talking about the border of Egypt? Are we talking about the Sinai? Is that where this started? Because the Middle East isn't that big.
Wherever the capital of Egypt was at the time, you know, because Pharaoh ruled the entire land.
I'm guessing Cairo, but I don't know for sure. It could have been Alexandria.
Well, I don't know. I wasn't there, but you know, and I'm
I wasn't
not
there
a,
either.
A geographical scholar. You know?
Okay, but see, these are the questions I have. Let's put some realism to this. This is what I do with Josie when she talks about chemtrails. So show me the aeronautical engineering plans. Show me the blueprints of the airplanes. Show me where the tanks are. You know, she hates it when I do that, but it's, you know. So let's look at a map. Well, let's look at it right now. I wonder if I can do that. How can I do that on my Google map, on my phone here? Cairo to, I forgot how to do that. Well, let's see how far it is. You know, let's go Cairo. Two. What if I get, this is probably not going to work, Canaan. Yeah, let's see what comes up. No, it gives me my GPS is confused. I'm looking at a map. Hang on. No, this is live radio, folks. This is what we do here. Okay, I got a globe. I got a globe right in front of me here. All right, so Cairo, Egypt. Canaan was near what city today? What would we call it? Or is it still called Canaan?
It's still called Canaan.
Okay, fine. So I got Israel. I've got Port Said. Jerusalem, Alexandria. Yeah, it's not that far. Basically, it's across the Sinai Peninsula is pretty much it. So
yeah.
Cairo's very close. So the Sinai Peninsula, is it about 100 miles across? Maybe? Guessing? What do you think?
Well, like I said, math is not my thing. So I'll let you figure that out.
Okay, well, tell me more, and I'll just look up a map of the Sinai Peninsula here. dimensions.
Yeah.
Isn't this fun? So, speaking of dimensions, ministry.
But the point is, while you're working on that, Moses didn't get to go into Canaan. He did not get to go into the promised land after putting up with all those things for 40 years. And this is why. He was angry and frustrated with the people, and we all can certainly understand that. He went, and the people were yet again complaining, we don't even have any fresh water. You know, we've been going around and around in the desert, and we don't have fresh water. Well, they had come to a place and a stopping point, and they needed water. And God, on several occasions previously, had provided water. He would tell Moses, strike a rock, and water, fresh water, would come out.
Huh.
To feed all those thousands of people. So that's how it was done. So this time Moses goes to God. He has had it up to here with all the complaining, and it's been a rough day, you know. And he said, these people are complaining that they don't have fresh water again, and started, you know, pouring his heart out to the Lord. So, and the Lord said, Moses, go and speak to the rock. Give the people fresh water.
Yeah.
So what does Moses do? He presumes that because he struck the rock in the past, that go do that again. But that's not what God said. God said, speak to the rock. But Moses was angry, remember?
Right.
He was kind of taking out his frustrations on the rock. He knew he couldn't go hit the people.
You know, we don't hear this out of Moses. This is very interesting.
And you were breaking up, would you say?
Oh, no, I said we don't. Well, it's probably because I'm looking up a map of Sinai. We don't hear this out of Moses. Moses, we think, you know, benevolent, wonderful, and made a couple of mistakes, but for the most part, did pretty well.
He did great. Lord, I'd have probably rounded half of them up and shot them myself, but okay. but so he comes, and he's angry, and he strikes the rock with his rod again. Now, understand that this is a holy rod. This is, you know, something that the Lord allowed him to do with the rod. Mm-hmm. And so he, out of his anger, it's safe to say he was, you know, pretty much operating in the flesh and not in the spirit at this time. He was letting his anger take over.
Uh-oh.
And so he struck the rock. Water came out so the people could have fresh water and, you know, let the animals drink and stuff and themselves. But it was an act of presumption. Well, God did it this way in the past. I'll just do it this way. And besides, I'm ticked off. So the people got what they needed. But God said, because you disobeyed, because you did not do as I instructed you, and you used what was holy. You misused what was holy. You know,
right.
You don't use holy things in that manner. And it was like he just went on presumption. Well, it worked in the past, and besides, I'm ticked. But that's not what God said. And he had even inquired of the Lord, you know, what do you want me to do? God told him, and he didn't do it. He did it his own way. So because of that, and I know there's much more to this. I'm just giving you the overview.
Mm-hmm.
He was not allowed to go into the promised land that he had been leading these people to. That should have been an 11-day journey. So
didn't anyone strike out on their own and say, Moses, I'm going to go ahead and just, you know, I'll report back to you, you know, and just you keep the people moving or whatever's going on. Weren't there any adventurous pioneers? I mean, I can see me doing that. You know, say, hey, Moses. You know,
Moses
I'm kind of impatient here.
Spies.
Oh.
Well, you read the story. Moses sent 12 spies. He chose 12 strong men to go over into Canaan and spy out the land to see what was going to happen. Do they need to take the land, or is there going to be a battle necessary? What does the land look like? And, you know, is there places to, you know, feed the cattle? You know, that kind of stuff. Yeah, just give us a report of the land. Now, understand, God had already told them, I'm giving you this land.
Yeah.
And you will go and take the land. There are people there, but you will rout them out and you will take the land because this is the land I've promised you. And so what do they do? 12 guys go in and they're to bring back their report. So they come back to Moses and 10 of them say, oh, we can't do this. We cannot take the land. There's giants in the land, and we are grasshoppers in their eyes. Caleb and Joshua come back saying, yeah, we can do this. It took both of them to carry one cluster of grapes. They were that huge and
wow.
heavy. This when he says the land of milk and honey, it was lush pasture. It was everything God promised them it would be. But there were giants in the land, and they would have to take it. So because they were giants and the 10 did not believe God, God had already said, you can take the land. Joshua and Caleb believed him. The 10 came back, did not. They looked at the giants and said, oh, we can't do this. So those people were not allowed into Canaan either.
The ones that said they couldn't do it? Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, number one, they called God a liar.
That doesn't go over well.
God had already said, you can take the land. You know? Mm-hmm. Oh, no, we can't.
Weenie.
Don't disagree with God. It doesn't end up well.
It doesn't.
So when Moses was told he cannot go into Canaan, he when he was on top of the mountain, he could see into Canaan, but he could not go. So Joshua led the people into the Canaan land. Well, those that were left. Basically, it was everybody 20 and under at the time, because all the older folk had complained against God so much and disobeyed God so much that he just said, that's it. So it was the younger generations that went.
So that's it. What's it? Were they killed? Did they die off? What happened to them?
Yeah, God opened up the earth and they swallowed them up.
Oh.
Earthquake came and.
So stop complaining.
You know.
People.
Stop complaining, man.
Well,
if
now
you
how
complain,
does
you remain, and I don't want to end up in a crack in the earth.
Exactly. Now, that's fascinating because I went through the San Francisco earthquake and did not have any damage or injury or anything like that, which is kind of interesting in itself. Because
that's,
you know, my
amazing
story, right? Well, no, it gets better. My story is, and this is what really, you know, vastly increased my belief in God, is because I was at Sierra Academy at the time going for a flight instructor certificate. And I lived in San Francisco, and I used to cross the Oakland Bay Bridge, and I took a freeway called the Cypress Structure. Well, the Cypress Structure was a double-decker structure that the engineers had all said was going to collapse in an earthquake. And of course, the corrupt politicians of that, no, it's fine, don't worry about it. So the upper deck was when you were going south.
Fine,
so what's that?
Yeah, fine, no problem.
Yeah, exactly. Politicians, that's going to be fine. Yeah, we got money. We got paid off for this. You know, we're going to keep it. Okay, fine. So the top part is when you went south, and the bottom part is when you went north. So returning to the city, I'd be under the Cypress Structure. Well, normally I'd go home from flight school at 5 o'clock. And the earthquake struck on a Tuesday at 5:04. And 60 people died outright, and hundreds of people were injured, lost limbs, were trapped under there for days. Now, figure this. I was told that morning, don't come to flight school because the plane I was supposed to fly was down for maintenance, and they didn't have another one for me. So just stay home. So what are the chances that on the San Francisco earthquake, the first major one since 1906, on the structure that could have killed me at the time I would have been there, I was told to stay home that day?
Right.
Yeah.
So who do you think had a hand in that?
Oh, I know who had a hand in that. That's what I was,
yeah.
Oh, boy. I'm thinking to myself, gee, that's, you know. And then I started, and this is why I look at, I think God differently than some folks. I mean, I think God understands me in many ways. It's really kind of interesting.
Yes.
Something happened. Well, you look at Action Radio. I mean, what's the one thing we talk about? Don't complain. Do.
Yep. Do something.
You know, we talk about raising complaining to an art form. Now, here's something that happened just last night. I'm in the gym, and I put this on Facebook, and I turn on, I was on the elliptical, and I turn on the video, and I'm expecting to get my usual, you know, CSI Miami, which is kind of like they've been doing reruns. It's kind of cool. It wasn't on. well, that was interesting, you know. And so I switched channels, and I end up at this story channel, and it's got a show on geniuses. I didn't know that, but the section I turned onto was about eccentrics. You think this sounds familiar, okay, Wendy? Now, again, what are the chances that I go to the gym, the show I normally watch isn't there, you know, and I just happen to find a channel at the exact time when basically my biography is there on the screen of eccentrics?
Wow.
See, this stuff happens all the time to me. This is why I think it's so fascinating. So I go, thanks, God. You know, I made a post on Facebook, you know, and it sort of sounds like I'm talking about being a genius. That was not the point of it. You only have so many words in these things. It's hard to do. But the point is that it talked about geniuses as people that don't care what others say about them, that are not crazy at all. They're very sane, but we're somewhere between, you know, madness and genius, you know, the eccentrics. And we just do things and see things in different ways. Like I see Action Radio and citizen legislation, the clearest path you can possibly imagine. It makes perfect sense to me. There's no doubt in my mind. It's all, I know exactly where we're going and what we're doing. That's very eccentric. But what was interesting about it, probably most interesting in terms of Action Radio, is that the one thing that the doctor, the psychologist who studies this, says that eccentrics, you know, really need help. They need to be surrounded by people who believe them, who believe in them, and understand what's going on and support what they're doing. And we have built here quite a community of Action Radio people. So that's no accident either. I could not do what I do without the support. If I was the only one, say, hey, I want to do a citizen legislature and a radio show, and everyone else said, go pound sand, Greg. You know, no. Bill Fecky says, hey, I got this thing called Blog Talk Radio. And I'm like, oh, okay, let's check this out. You know, and I wasn't I was kind of curious about internet radio, thinking that broadcast a regular station is the way to go. Well, it turned out it worked out a lot better. You know, you're here. Jonathan's been here for years. A lot of people have been. Josie's been here since WBY. We have a community of people that believe in what we're doing. That's all the support I need. Right. I don't need the fame. I mean, I need the fame to be able to have political impact, but I don't need the fame personally. I don't care. I'm happy now. But isn't that interesting?
Yes, it is interesting. You've got your own testimony in progress here.
No, yeah. You know, God's like, you know, okay. Hey, Greg, you're going to watch this now. Okay. Thanks, God. Appreciate the help. Thanks for the bio. You know, but this is just the kind of – but my life has been like this for quite a while. You know, and I see these things all the time. And I think people, they get so wrapped up in what it means to be Christian and fulfill the role of being Christian that they miss the miracles every day. That they're into, I don't know how to describe this. It's kind of a new thought. I haven't really worked it through yet. But they're going through the motions of being Christian, and they say they've given their life to Jesus, and they believe absolutely. And I'm thinking, well, do you see the miracles along the way? Do you notice how much God impacts your life every single day? And it's not big things, it's little things. But that was a big thing, you know, avoiding the Cypress structure, avoiding being crushed by untold tons, you know, a gazillion tons of concrete that was corrupt, that was horrible, that was badly built. They knew it was badly built. They let it stay up. They knew it was going to collapse in an earthquake, and it did exactly as predicted. To miss that the one day, to be told to stay home, that's a miracle.
It is. And you're exactly right. Like all those people that were supposed to be at work on 9/11, and things were happening and keeping them from going or making it on time.
Or maybe the car battery died, or the traffic was too bad, or the subway got clogged, or, you know, there's a million little things, you know. And here's a bigger one that we've talked about a lot on the show. The fact that the Industrial Revolution – I just had Gregory Wrightstone from the CO2 Coalition. He's confirmed this. The former head of Greenpeace said basically the same thing. We came to this independently on our own here, that the Industrial Revolution, the releasing of carbon dioxide, you know, from the earth that had been, you know, created, the hydrocarbons created by mushing all that organic stuff, you know, plankton, algae, all that stuff together over millions of years. We were at a low point in the mid-1800s in carbon dioxide. We were 30 parts per million away from ending life on earth. It was 108 parts per million, and 150 is, you know, death. That's when the plants die. And so I don't think people realize this, but, you know, you want to talk about just making one little slight thing. It's like God, and this is what we should talk about too. God sets things in motion. And then kind of we do it ourselves and think that we did it, all right? So you look at the internal combustion engine and the steam engine. The one thing they do is they burn organic fuel, not fossil. We don't get it from dinosaur bones. So these are organic fuels, oil, coal, natural gas, wood. These are natural fuels, and they all have a couple things in common: H2O, water vapor, and CO2, carbon dioxide. the carbon, hydrogen, right. and oxygen compounds. And when we burn them and burn the chemical bonds to create the energy that moves the steam trains and the diesel trucks and you know, our automobiles, we're releasing carbon dioxide and water vapor into the atmosphere. Well, that carbon dioxide goes to the plants. So it's no accident that the major increase in carbon dioxide did come from human activity. But that's not a bad thing. That's actually right. a good thing. In fact, it saved our butts. Because without that extra carbon dioxide, we would have been dangerously low, or we would have gotten to the point where plants started dying. That's right. God. That's God to me. You know, just all of a sudden we discover petroleum. And it saved the whales, too, because we're using whale oil to, you know, light our buildings and things. So between the light bulb, you know, and the burning of organic fuels, you know, we basically saved the planet and created the Industrial Revolution and brought unparalleled wealth and freedom to, you know, a good chunk of the world.
Right.
That's good. That's God to me. You know, that just that the discovery of those things, of the engines, the internal combustion engine, the steam engine, and the fact that organic fuels could power them. That's all God had to do. So does God limit and say, okay, I just need to do this. I'll just create the, you know, just put the brain out there, put the idea out there that you can burn these things and they will create energy and just see what, you know, just let the rest go. Have I got that right? Or
yeah.
Have you thought about that? What do you think?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, I think of all kinds of crazy crap that nobody else is going to be thinking about.
Well, this is the place to say the crazy crap. Well, we'll name this the Crazy Crap Show for a while. I don't care. And now, a moment with Wendy's Crazy Crap.
The Crazy Crap Report.
Exactly. We can do that.
There's, I wanted to, if we could, just for a moment, get back to the presumption thing.
Oh, please. I wouldn't presume to do otherwise.
Foremost.
Sorry.
I this is kind of like what God's been laying on my heart, because he's letting me know that what is fixing to happen and how he's going to be doing things is not going to look good. And we are going to be really, really tempted about complaining about everything because we idolize convenience in this country. I think people idolize convenience worldwide.
Especially the lazy.
But especially here.
They're lazy. People would rather take the lazy path than the interesting. They're lazy. They don't take the interesting path. Am I breaking up?
No, I'm just saying. I couldn't understand what you said. But now I understand
lazy.
You said lazy.
Yeah, lazy. They're
yeah,
lazy. They're, you know, I'd rather be interesting than lazy. And I have no interest in being lazy.
Yeah, people don't want to put a lot of effort into anything anymore. And it's sad because, you know, you learn things from putting effort into something and you get much
every
greater
day.
Reward, you know, in internally as well as externally, you know, so, but anyway, so, people complain when they don't get exactly what they want, when exactly they want it. So, and,
well, now I'm impatient.
Find out how cool they are.
You know me, I'm impatient. I wanted, you know, 5 million listeners by now. I'm not complaining about it though, because I understand. And I have to earn that.
Right. But
I'm still impatient.
But
but I'm not complaining about it. So there's a difference.
Right. And there is a difference. You are doing something about it because you are working to see a result that you already see in your head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and maybe not be on paper right now, but it's going to be, you know. So you are taking action about it. And that's the important thing. You're putting forth the effort for it. But there's going to be a lot of presumption on everyone's part worldwide, that things are going to continue to operate the way they always have been. This is just another little inconvenience. No, it's not, people. Don't presume that. You better be asking the Lord what he wants you to do to prepare in your part of the world, because it's coming. And
this history making changes. What happened yesterday was historic. It's never happened before.
It was historic.
That a speaker was booted by one member of Congress. You don't think one person can make a difference? Matt Gaetz made a difference. I got to talk to him, by the way, too. We need him back on the show. But you don't think one person can make a difference? That one person was joined by 8 people.
Yes,
now, Democrats did it for different reasons, but it didn't matter. The end result is somebody who was corrupt and disgusting and had no interest in this country and every interest in a deep state government was kicked out of the speakership. That's huge.
Right.
That's David and Goliath right there.
Huge.
8 versus, you know, the deep 8 and the 8-1.
Yes. And God is going to show himself and his plan, and it's going to disassemble all the junk we've had in place, the evil stuff that's enslaved people forever, and mm-hmm. it has to be dismantled. And it is not going to be business as usual, and it is not going to be convenient. So I'm just saying, I'm warning people now. You know, and with all the love I can muster to tell you that it must come down. The bad has to come down for the good to come back in. And that's what you need to keep in mind. And don't presume that everything's going to work the way it always has been, because it won't. And if you presume things, it's going to hold you back, and it's going to cause a lot more problems. Just let God do what he's going to do, and just follow his lead. So I'm begging you, if you don't have a relationship with God that where you can hear him and he hears you, get one. All you have to do is ask. Just get one, but you're going to need it. Go ahead.
Yeah, it makes your life infinitely easier and a whole lot more interesting and fun, and you realize it's not just you. That's probably the best part. And I think from someone who you know, was agnostic at one point, wasn't quite sure, and you know, got thrown out of Bible class in school because I asked questions. And I thought, this is religion stuff. It's not for me. You know, if they can't answer my questions, I'm not going to, you know, just believe. Believe what? You know, you didn't answer my questions. I'm like, you know, 6 years old, right? No, I was 8 years old. Anyway, but yeah, so I see these things. So to me, it's very positive. And I think people are open to, I guess they think that faith, you know, means you never see God. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, that makes sense. It's pretty much religion.
Yeah. Have faith, but never see God, and just believe what I tell you. Yeah, that's terrible.
Right.
That's empty. What about the people that think they believe in God and have a relationship with God, but they don't see God. They don't look for God. They don't see God in everything that's happening out there. I see this all the time. I see what happened yesterday is God. You know, you talk about the plan is coming. I think the plan's already underway. I think it's been underway all week, and probably before then. But things are already in motion, and it can't see when you say presumption, which is probably the most interesting part of that, is that you said that people presume things can go on as they had, but quite frankly, they can't go on as they have been going on, because the way
right.
they were going on wasn't working. It wasn't promoting freedom. It wasn't living, you know, as God intended us to live. It wasn't doing anything. It was basically concentrating power in the most corrupt, evil, megalomaniac people on the planet. Well, that's not the plan for us.
No, it's not. But we have been indoctrinated into it. And, yeah, I was talking to somebody who was born in the 70s last night.
What's that?
And, and I said I was talking to somebody who was born in the 70s last night.
Huh.
They were just clueless about how everything that they have grown up knowing, they don't even know that they're being enslaved. They just think, well, it's just what they say, so that's what we do. And it's no.
So is there a time, so I was born, you know, I think we were probably born, I was born in 1959, right? So we're the last of the baby boomers. You don't have to reveal your exact age. That's okay. I'll reveal mine. But there's something about our generation that we know how to use a compass and we know how to read a map. You know, we didn't have answering machines, so we had to actually face who was on the phone, not knowing who it was. You know, we had to be able to change a tire. You know, we had to be able to do things for ourselves. There's a self-sufficiency. But we also had to go through school. And at that time, school actually, you know, educated. What didn't educate, we were encouraged to learn on our own. My folks, one of the few good things they did, they gave me the World Book Encyclopedia when I was 8 years old. Said, here, go learn stuff. Great. So I did.
Yeah.
You know, and I still remember stuff. I can still, you know, remember the feel of the books, the smell of the paper, the whole bit. Okay. So, and that was a long time ago. But the kids don't do that. They don't look for knowledge. There's a time, there's probably a line we can find where people went from independence to dependence. Where they didn't think for themselves, they let the machines do the thinking for them. It's probably the computer age.
Right.
You know, it's like kids can be well informed, but they're not. Go ahead.
It started in the 70s, the late 70s.
Okay.
And because I when computers started becoming a thing and key punch, you know, machines were being replaced by regular computers and all kinds of stuff, and ticker tape was, you know, not used. Now, then you had a fax machine. Then you had, it's like all this stuff started happening.
Mm-hmm.
And we began to rely less and less on our own intelligence and skill that you could learn, you know. Now it was just done for you.
But see, our generation, we use the internet to find out things. Like I was looking up, you know, the dimensions of the Sinai Peninsula. It's about 100 miles, which is kind of interesting, which would take about 10, 11 days to cross with a whole bunch of people
right.
and cattle.
Right.
Now that, so that confirms exactly what you're saying. But the curiosity to do that. Now, the exception, of course, is Brianna, our teenage reporter. I mean, she looks stuff up on the show all the time. So she uses
yes,
technology.
She
the technology does not use her, which is the difference.
That's right. That's right.
Hmm.
And which is what AI is about, you know. And AI is setting itself up to be God, you know. And I am the be-all and end-all, and I will tell you anything you ever want to know.
Hmm. We need to do an AI show. You know, what Scripture said about, you know, this kind of a thing coming. Skynet. Isn't it interesting? The movies are always
yeah,
like 10 years ahead. The movies always tell you what the
yeah.
future is going to be. You know, Star Trek told us about flip phones. You know, we don't have phasers yet, but, you know, and floppy disks. You know, V for Vendetta told us about a government using a pandemic to take over control of everything.
Yeah.
You know, 1984, Animal Farm, you know, Orwell told us all about, you know, psychological operations and control and manipulation. You know, the Matrix.
Well, if you think about it.
Made us a battery. You know, I mean, the movies yeah. are actually really good about predicting history. In fact, they're quite accurate. In fact, it's kind of interesting.
They weren't predicting history. They were planting seeds in the populist mind of how it will be. It's not, oh, this is a possibility. They're planting the seed of this is how it will be, because all of these things that we take in, the mind's a computer, and it just, mm-hmm. it takes in all this information and beep, beep, beep. All of a sudden, when things start happening, there's something in the psyche that says, oh, well, they said it would be this way, so okay. It makes you accept it easier.
No, I rebel against it even stronger because they knew. They should have known better not to do it. Now, is that a generational
but
reaction?
But you aren't the regular populace.
Well,
you
that's
know,
true.
Look
I'm eccentric.
At all the sheeple.
Eccentrics yeah. of the world unite.
You know,
yeah.
All the people still wearing masks, like you said, inside the car with the windows rolled up. I mean, this is... they are programmed. So I just don't even get me started. But anyway,
that is the definition of insanity. Yeah, yeah.
Yes,
well, I appreciate the extra time. I don't know if you have to dash or anything, but, you know, but this has been fascinating. Yeah. So just to brighten your day. When all about is corruption, debauchery, and anarchy, when everyone is losing their way, buried in a mountain of fake news and propaganda, there is a place you can go where beauty and poetry of the mind get to play. Where is that place? Where is that space of wonder and magic? Where else? The Action Radio Art Report with Wendy Arthur. So those of you who are presuming, you know, get in your pretty space, get in your beauty space, get in your place of wonder and imagination. Throw off the shackles of convention and conditioning. And, yeah. Hey, speaking of the art project, we got some pretty good stuff there now. It's a really interesting place.
We do.
Yeah.
It is an interesting place. It's one of my favorite pages.
Yeah. So is that a – so it'd be interesting to do a little discussion of the spirituality of art, because that's almost like a counter to the conditioning. This is the way the world is. We're going to be the Matrix. You're going to be a battery. You're going to be plugged into a cell. And some big, ugly, you know, robot with eight arms is going to, you know, steal your power. However, we've got Da Vinci. You know, we've got, you know, we've got Beethoven. There's really cool people out there that do nice things. So, you know, it's almost, here's a weird thought. Do you see art as the fight against the conditioning, the programming of the mind? That whereas art and music open the mind, science almost closes the mind. This is the way it is. Art says, well, what about looking at it this way? You know, so can we use, here's a thought for you, as you do both the art and the Oh My God report, although we haven't heard an art report for a while, is art and music a way to uncondition the brain or decondition the brain from a lot of this, you know, programming that we're getting? Because it opens you up to all kinds of new ways of looking at things.
Well, art is, it helps the creative side of you, you know, which mm-hmm. is your thinking brain. You know, just goes to create things because the way it's programmed now, they don't want you to think. They just want you to accept and regurgitate what it is they're telling you.
Mm-hmm.
And creativity can't thrive in that. So the only artists that are being supported is the ones that are supporting the narrative, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. No, it's not me. I don't see a lot of government support. I haven't gotten a grant. You know. Surprise, surprise. Of course, we're not a nonprofit either. And that's something. Have you noticed that anything is political, it can't be nonprofit, even though they are. The leftist ones are, like National Public Socialist Radio. But those of us that are political.
Well, not
cannot,
only that,
can,
but
yeah.
the nonprofits were used as the drop-off points, you know, for, well, not all of them, but several very large nonprofits who were funded by the Democrat Party were the drop-off points for the illegal votes. So, and that's caught on video.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's kind of interesting. Yep. Interesting day. Okay. I'm going to take a break here.
Well, thank
you. And I think let you do your thing. And this has been fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if anybody has any input.
Yep.
Yeah. Anybody has any input or has any questions or just wants to make some comments, then you can get a hold of me on Facebook on Wendy Arthur or Art by Wendy Arthur or Dimensions Ministries. Or feel free to comment on anything that's posted on one of the Action Radio pages. And we will get
the
back to
many.
But
the 25 groups. Well, actually, I might be knocking out one or two. What's that now?
Yeah. I said the many Action Radio pages.
But
yeah. As until I see you next week, bow now and avoid the rush.
Absolutely. Thanks, Wendy.
Bye.
Here is your Action Radio contact and website information. The call-in line is 215-383-3832. Our show site is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Same link, live and a podcast. Please share all our shows. We have live chat at the bottom of the broadcast page available worldwide. Sign in to your free account and type away. We have an internet Skype line where you can call the show worldwide also. Please see the broadcast page for our Skype name. Call in during the show to get approved. Our bill writing site is writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. This is where anyone can write a bill and start the process of it becoming law. My paid and free subscription column is at gregpenglis.substack.com. Please consider a paid subscription of $5 per month or greater. For contributions to Action Radio, please go to givesendgo.com/actionradio. We have over 20 Action Radio Facebook groups. Use the Facebook search window by putting in Action Radio to find our groups. My public email is greg@writeyourlaws.com. Please contact me about advertising on Action Radio and helping our mission of freedom. Thank you for listening. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Grace Care. And now as an affiliate of Grace Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Grace Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is gracecare.com. That's GRAITH care.com. You can email them at gracecare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Grace Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. And now back to the news. This is not what we would call a slow news day. I was kind of joking with Bill earlier about that, but there's a problem, and the problem I see it is that the weenie baby butt wipe Republicans. That's actually a term that came from my my flight instruction book. And I don't know if I want to explain the context. You'd have to read the book. It made sense at the time, but I was pretty upset. I was kind of burned out instructor with what I was doing. Anyway, I'm gonna use that now for the geldings. So the gelding GOP are the weenie baby butt wipes. In other words, they just complain, just like Wendy was talking about. And so they have, you know, their only reaction to Matt Gaetz and the other seven folks, you know, voting against the Speaker McCarthy or Kevin McDeepstate, as we call him around here, is to say, oh, no, oh, this is a terrible thing for the country. Oh, this is horrible. The increasing national debt without a debt ceiling was a good thing. Like the fact that, you know, there's been no committee on the stolen election, that they have not defunded anything in the Department of Justice, you know, going after people simply because they're Trump supporters. They haven't defunded the DOJ, the D.C. Gulag jail. That thing's still in operation. They haven't defunded all the groups, the NGOs, Catholic charities, Lutheran charities, Baptist charities, the ones that are being paid billions of dollars to take barbarians that are being brought into our country and dropped off in various locations to, as far as Democrats are concerned, start voting, and the Republicans be cheap labor. You know, we have an invasion of our country right now. McCarthy's done nothing. He purposely, you know, held anything like that up. He's had nothing but continuing resolutions and omnibus spending bills after promising not to do that. We've got Ukraine. You know, why are we funding Ukraine? You know, why don't we make them pay the money back? Because I'm sorry, you can't have any more money. You've got to pay it back. You know, I mean, there's so many things that he didn't do or that he did do when he made that illegal deal with Brandon on the budget. You can't do that. Speaker of the House cannot go to the president. You know, that's two branches of government, you know, colluding by eliminating the legislative branch, which is the Congress. So he can't do that. So the reason that McCarthy was booted was because he broke every promise he made. He did exactly the opposite. He did exactly what we said he would do. He would become a deep state operative. He'd become the next Paul Ryan. He would stop the Republicans from doing anything meaningful. I mean, they've held some hearings, you know, on various people, but they haven't subpoenaed anyone and you know, said we want charges brought. You know, they haven't defunded any operation. You know, Merrick Garland hasn't been impeached. You know, Mayorkas hasn't been impeached. Granholm Energy hasn't been impeached. Buttigieg of Transportation hasn't been impeached. You know, Brandon hasn't been arrested for stealing the White House along with Kamala Harris. Nothing's happened. That's why he's out. Okay. So there's a whole variety of reasons. In fact, I wrote an article, you know, reasons I'm not voting for the Republicans in the next election, because they don't do anything. They sit there. We've got solutions to every one of their problems. You know, we really do. I mean, and the biggest one is the constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money. Now, the people I'm recommending for speaker are Jim Jordan and Devin Nunes. Devin Nunes used to be the head of the Intelligence Committee. He's the one that uncovered all the stuff on the Russia hoax and the FISA lies and the Trump spying and everything else. He's the one that got all that. Okay, he'd be a great speaker. And his name isn't even being mentioned. Jim Jordan would be another good speaker. Matt Gaetz at his press conference mentioned a couple of other people in House leadership. I don't think I want anybody in House leadership. I want someone who's a proven fighter. I want someone who's going to get out there and do what's supposed to be done. Okay. Now, it's interesting that Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert, to what I would think of as America First people, actually supported McCarthy. So let me tell you something about politics that maybe you don't know, that the reason so many Republicans, and this hasn't been brought out, it's probably too bad, I'm glad I remembered this, but that the speaker has enormous power because the speaker is the one who selects the committee chairs. The committee chairs are where the power is for anybody who's not speaker. If you're in the committee chair, you get to decide what issues to talk about. You get to decide what hearings to hold. You get to decide which bills come up. You get to have amazing power in your area. They're like little warlords. They're like the warlords of Congress, all right? So the big daddy is the speaker, or big mommy, in the case of Nancy Pelosi. But the speaker, and here's why I talked about, and I mentioned this with Bianchi, is that there shouldn't be parties. We should not have you can have political parties, but nobody who runs for office or who is in office can belong to a political party. See, you've got to take the politics out of that, because who determines who's the speaker? Well, the majority party, and the parties vote in lockstep, because they know damn well if they don't support the person who's the most popular for speaker, they don't get committee chairs. So all those Republicans, you know, you ask the Republicans, they say, well, they're voting for McCarthy for the good of the country. That's BS. They're voting for McCarthy so they can advance in Congress. They're supporting McCarthy simply with the hope that McCarthy will make them a committee vice chair or a chair, or give them a subcommittee or a full committee, or maybe even make them leadership. This is about kissing McCarthy's butt. I think I'm going to sneeze. I'm going to have to mute myself here for a second. Hang on. I'll see if I can do this in time. Sorry about that. That was a big sneeze, too. All right, anyway. But this is what it's about, okay? And I wish they, you know, somebody, of course, the news people don't say that. You know, that's why you listen here. We tell you things that they don't. But this is about kissing McCarthy's butt. And the reason they do that is because they want power. They want McCarthy to throw them some breadcrumbs and make them committee chairs, subcommittee chairs, leadership positions, or anything like that. That's why they're doing it. And they know damn well that if they don't vote for McCarthy and he stays as speaker, they're toast. They will never get a committee chair as long as McCarthy is speaker. And sometimes speakers can stay around for decades. You know, so if you were a Democrat who opposed Nancy Pelosi, you know, for all the time that she was a speaker, you would never get a committee chair. You wouldn't even get a vice chair. Your bills would never make it to the floor. There would be an absolute vendetta against you. And she was known for that. You know, so you oppose her, that's it. You're toast. You might as well go do something else, because you're not going to get anywhere in Congress. If you're a Democrat and you oppose Pelosi, you're done. Now, McCarthy wasn't quite as bad as that, but he wasn't much better. You know, I mean, in other words, you weren't quite done. So all those people voted for McCarthy because they didn't want the retaliation from McCarthy if he actually stayed as speaker. That's why they did it. Marco, does that make sense over there in the Netherlands? Let's see what he has to say about this. So let's get a couple of rants from different people. You've heard my rant, but that's my rant, is that they did it to save their sorry asses. They're weenie baby butt wipes. That's all they are, weenie baby butt wipes. That's my new term I'm borrowing from a previous term, you know, to describe the Republican geldings, because geldings apparently isn't strong enough. Anyway, here's an America First report from J.D. Rucker, one of my favorite authors, who says a short rant against those in conservative media attacking Matt Gaetz. Yeah, everybody in the media last night, not only were the Republican sycophants, the deep state, all lining up, but all the media was lining up too. Oh, Matt Gaetz made a mistake. Oh, this is a terrible thing for America. Oh, what are we going to do? Matt Gaetz is doing this for his own power. He's doing this because he wants to be speaker. He's doing this because of his ego. No, he's doing it because McCarthy sucks. That's why he did it. Here's what the article says. October 3rd, 2023. So this would right before 10-4. This is, written a couple of days ago. It says, here's my short take. This is J.D. Rucker. Here's my short take on the attacks against Matt Gaetz from conservative media. He says that if there's one silver lining that has come from this conflict, it's that we're seeing who is conservative, who, I can move this, my computer screen over. Sorry, brighten it up a little bit. Again, reading is not my specialty. If there's one silver lining that has come from this conflict, it's that we're seeing who in conservative media are fighting 100% for the American people and which ones are only conservative when it's convenient. That is true. Nothing Matt Gaetz has been saying is wrong. That's true, too. I'm disappointed in his conservative media detractors, some of whom are people that I fully expected to back him. That's interesting also. He says, can any of them make a case for omnibus over individual spending bills? In other words, the lawful appropriations bills, the 13 appropriations bills, it's not in federal law, but it's certainly in the rules of Congress that they come up with appropriations bills. And Kevin Deep State sending everybody home for 6 weeks meant that they would never have time for those appropriations bills. That's why he did it. That's what makes him, you know, an economic traitor as well as, I believe, a national traitor. Time to go, McCarthy. Deep State. Yeah, 6 weeks of vacation right before a budget crisis? Oh, brilliant. Nice move. And what's the first thing the temporary speaker does? Sends everybody home for a few more days. Well, let's think about this for a while. So what are they going to do during those days? Well, they're going to call up those eight and tell them to renominate McCarthy. That's what they're going to do. So this is a lobbying effort. The reason they're taking this break is not because Congress needs a break. They just had 6 weeks, right? So this is a break to arm twist behind the scenes, you know, enough votes to get McCarthy back in as speaker. That's what this is about. Even though he says he's not running, don't believe anything. You know, he said, I'm not really running for speaker, but if you insist, I'll take it back. Yeah, of course he will. Because it's power. That's what it's all about in Washington. It's power, right? That's the currency. That's the stock and trade. That's what wakes him up in the morning. That's what makes him happy. Power. Article says, can any of them make a case for, can any of them claim McCarthy has stuck to the terms of the deal that he agreed to in order to become speaker? No, is when he would say, no. Anyway, can any of them say it's a total coincidence that the ethics complaint long shelved popped up back now? That's against Matt Gaetz. Yeah, how about that? All of a sudden, Matt Gaetz votes to remove the speaker, and all of a sudden his ethics violation is back. Oh, how convenient. Then it says, can any of them justify pulling Ukraine funding in the continuing resolution only to work a deal for continued aid in the shadows with Chuck Schumer? I don't know much about that deal. Someone might have to call and tell me about that. Then it said, is dirty politics being played by both sides, but for whatever reason, the status quo filth is getting a pass from so many of these, quote, conservative commentators, while they lambaste Gaetz and his allies for being scrappy for the sake of the nation. He says, I like Mark Levin, Newt Gingrich, and Mike Huckabee, but they and others are wrong to be propping up Ukraine first rhino, Kevin McCarthy, or as we affectionately know him here, Kevin McDeep State. Okay, fine. Yeah, so Marco's missing some of our... Marco, listen on the podcast. You'll catch it all then. So I got my short rant. I did that. There's an article I haven't either I read it way back when or it's a little bit ago, but I find this interesting too. Same guy. No, this is Alex Berenson. Alex Berenson, former New York Times writer until they fired him for being good. This was August 25th. So I have this one hanging around for a little bit. He says, on the coming radicalism of Donald J. Trump, he says the indictments have fueled him. Yeah, that's what I call him, one pissed off hombre. It's kind of the same thing, right? He says if he wins in 2024, his second presidency, well, actually his third, will marry that personal fury with a conservative attack on the administrative state to remake the government radically. See, this is why I like reading J.D. Rucker, because either he agrees with me or I agree with him. It's kind of mutual that he's saying exactly what I'm saying. So, of course, I favor his articles, right? But that's what I think Trump's going to do. Trump is the one person who has the determination who can actually make decisions. You know, he's proven that in the first term. And he's pissed. He is so pissed. He hates these the having to appear before these stupid radical leftist Marxist judges. He hates having to do that. He's got better things. He's got a campaign to run, right? So yes, these ridiculous court cases for judges that are smiling for the pictures. Ha! Look at me. I'm a judge. Oh boy, right? Saw the pictures yesterday. But it's fascinating that that's what's going on. All right. Back to the article. Donald Trump has felt the boot of the government on his neck, and he is angry. That's an image of Nazism, by the way, the boot on the neck. He says that he is angry. Conventional wisdom about Trump's first term is that for all his bluster, he governed as a fairly standard conservative. And, as it sometimes is, the conventional wisdom is correct. Whatever Trump's radical impulses might have been, the bureaucracy and his own limitations kept them in check through 2020. See, I see that as a mistake, not a virtue. Trump, back to the article, cut taxes, appointed conservative Supreme Court judges, not justices, sorry, and allowed the government to continue to grow. He made noise about NATO, but ultimately took no action. He hardened the southern border, but remained far from closing it. Well, that's different. You can't really say that. The money was denied. He had to do a lawsuit to get the money to build it. So, yeah, that, and he said he was 3 weeks away from finishing it. Yeah, I'm not quite sure about all that. Anyway, then he says when COVID arrived, he deferred to public health experts and did not fight lockdowns or mask mandates. Yeah, that's his biggest fault. I'll tell you right now. That is Trump's biggest mistake. And what people forget is the pandemic playbook. So Obama already had instructions for what to do in a pandemic. Gee, where'd those come from? Oh, I don't know. Dr. Fascist? Yeah, of course they did. So Dr. Fascist is still, you know, hanging out in government. So Obama takes Dr. Fascist's playbook, gives it to Dr. Fascist, says, here you go. Here's your COVID playbook. And they give it to Trump. But Trump rejected it, of course. I'm not going to go by this. So Dr. Fascist gets the Obama playbook for how to handle COVID. And, of course, that includes lockdowns, masks, mandates, vaccines, all this other crap. Everything to destroy this country. That's what COVID was all about, destroying the country and stealing the election. That's what COVID was about. Because, yeah, was it a real virus? Oh, it absolutely was a real virus. I had it. Was it fatal? No, not to most of us, not to 99.9-something percent of us. It was, an irritation, a couple-day delay, a couple of days of being sick. Okay, well, that happens. You know, viruses are out there, even man-made ones. But what Trump did, there is no excuse for. He totally botched it. More people died on ventilators in hospitals than anything else. He really, and they say, well, he's not really made, you know, to own up to his mistakes. That's not how he's built. Well, I don't give a damn about that. He has got to say something. Say, look, I screwed up. I goofed. I never should have let Dr. Fascist do anything. I never should have turned this over to the health Nazis. You know, he's not going to use those words. I use those words. You know, I never should have. I should have listened to Dr. Zelenko, to Peter Navarro, to Scott Atlas. You know, to all the other doctors that said that COVID, that hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin worked because they did. That's what he should have said. You know, and my article, the cure for COVID was freedom. It's right there on my Substack, gregpangloss.substack.com. The cure for COVID was always freedom, particularly freedom of information. If we had the freedom of information, COVID would have been done in a few months because everybody would have known that hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin plus vitamin D3, vitamin C, and zinc kill COVID. And if everybody knew that, they would have taken it. Hydroxychloroquine tablets were 20 cents. You know, you combine that with, you go, yeah, so we do like a jelly. Oh, you got some hydroxychloroquine, right? And then you got some zinc, and you got some vitamin D, some vitamin C, and maybe some azithromycin if you think you're going to get pneumonia. So you put them together, right? It costs you about $20. You know, so $20. You cure COVID for about $20. So, yeah, the cure for COVID was about $20. Figure the ivermectin, the vitamin D3, the vitamin C, and the zinc is about $20. For a week supply of those, you know, or maybe a little more, maybe a little less. But anyway, so I'm just rough figure. So $20, how much did they spend on one dose of remdesivir? $3,200. Okay. So remdesivir, which killed people because it destroyed their kidneys, caused them to go on ventilators, which destroyed their lungs and basically killed people, including my webmaster, you know, Eric Colley, my wonderful friend who was killed by a hospital ventilator, tortured to death as they tortured millions of people, you know, around the world with these things. Trump he's got to straighten that out. He's got to say something. And so it remains to see whether he actually will, but that's what I think he should do. Okay, back to the article. I have no idea where I was. Okay, then. This is Trump talking about his record. Cut taxes, appointed conservative Supreme Court justices, which are actually judges, and allowed the government. I think I read all that. Here we go. Trump spoke like a populist, but he governed in the post-World War II, post-New Deal American tradition, which assumed the world is an unruly place and only a strong America headed by a large federal government can lead it. Yeah, that's not true. That's not a true assumption. The world is an unruly place, but it's not our business. You know, our business is to advance America. Every country's interest is advancing their own country. We're not the world's policeman. We're not the world's bank account. You know, we're not the world's anything. In fact, if we want to save the world, the first thing we should do is get rid of the UN, get out of NATO, you know, stop these big partnerships and other things and hemispherical governments, just and tell the European Union to pound sand. We don't need them either. That's what we should do. All right. Then Rucker says, whether or not you agree with that view, all of us should recognize that it has been the consensus for three generations now. Yeah, that's probably with older leaders like Trump. This is, but the consensus is breaking, especially on the right. Oh, here we go. The populist right is furious at government support for the left's increasingly overt cultural intrusions. That's very true. Further, it sees no financial benefit either from the neoliberalism that was the left's playbook before 2008, in other words, the crash, or the climate change-driven anti-growth policies that the left has peddled since. The populist left promises that it has learned its neoliberalism lesson and will split the pie more fairly for the working class. It misunderstands that the populist right wants a bigger pie first. Yeah, see, that's the thing. So the left thinks that the economic pie is set. It's only so big. So all you can do is make the slices go different directions. That's not true. So the whole idea of economic growth is that you make the pie bigger. That's what it's all about. So then the same slice actually is bigger because the pie is bigger. So that's that another time. Anyway, so then he says, these currents are not new, but before Donald Trump, the Republican Party had largely suborned them for a generation. The elite right, the Washington right, in other words, what I call the nation of government, all right? I have an article on that. It's titled The Nation of Government. He says, was content to nibble at the fringes of the administrative state while launching two wars in Iraq, the second monumentally stupid and destructive, and failing to navigate its way out of Afghanistan. Yeah, those wars were only for one reason, to make the military-industrial complex, the bankers and the weapons contractors, and all the different people involved rich, and to give the generals more power and more weapons. That's what it was for. Those wars were not because of national security, because I don't see Iraq or Afghanistan packing up their ships and tanks and planes and coming over and attacking us. I don't think it's going to happen, okay? So unless they're going to do that, unless they're going to send missiles to us, you know, ships to us, planes and people to invade our shores, they're not a threat. Oh, terrorism, yeah, that's a threat too, but that's more of a law enforcement thing. Yeah, if you have a terrorist in the country, shoot them. You know, if they're walking with a bomb over to a building, you know, yeah, anyway. But you deal with them. You can deal with terrorists. We got a whole security state watching every American. The least they can do is watch the terrorists. So that's not an issue either. He says it was the failure of the second Iraq war that paved the way for Donald Trump. That's interesting. Yeah, the first war was George Bush the Elder, who wanted to, get back into the globalist idea that we always have to be at war somewhere so that everybody else makes money, so that he and all his buddies can make money. That's what the first war was about. The second war, George Bush the Younger, was about proving that he's tougher than daddy. That was a war for George W. Bush's ego. That is the only reason for that war. There were no weapons of mass destruction. There was no reason to do it. You know, was Saddam Hussein a bad person? Oh, yeah, there are lots of bad people out there. The theocracy in Iran, the Chinese Communist Party, you know, Putin, the heads of various communist countries around the world. There's lots of bad people out there. But we don't go to war with them all. It's not our business. Our business is to help the people and try and create a more free society and remove the government corruption. We can show them a better way, but you can't force a better way. That's the difference. All right. Back to the article. It was a failure of the second Iraq war that paved the way for Donald Trump, radicalizing the Republican base in a slower but arguably even more profound way than the failure of Vietnam radicalized the Democrat base. That's interesting. So Trump won the Republican nomination, and then he beat Hillary Clinton, the ultimate neoliberal. Yeah, she's just a warmonger. Even though all the good people who thought all the right thinks, including the entire media, were with her. I was horrified at the thought of a Hillary presidency. Scared to death of one because, you know, she doesn't have any limits. She has no conscience, no soul, no restrictions. She would impose a dictatorship and tell herself that it's the right thing to do and convince people, oh, well, this is for your good. This is the public good. I'm only interested in the public good. I'm only doing this to have a more just society so we can be more equitable as you walk into the gulag and all your possessions are stolen and given to illegal alien barbarians. Then he says, but for all his bluster, Trump did not really know what to do with his power. That's a very profound statement. I agree. He did a lot of good things, but they were mostly nuts and bolts operations. You know, making NATO pay, building the wall. He didn't profoundly change government. And this one needs to do this time. He needs to profoundly change government by firing 2/3 of it, at least. I'd say everybody over 30 in the federal government needs to go. Because if they've been there and they're over 30, they're probably corrupt. If they're under 30, yeah, we can retrain them. But Trump did not really know what to do with his power. I agree. Because he appointed a cabinet, but he didn't supervise those below. And so all the minions, all the apparatchiks, all the leftists that were below cabinet level, and they weren't supervising either, were doing everything they did in the Obama administration and opposed Trump as opposed to in doing it in favor of Obama. So basically we had an Obama bureaucracy with a Trump presidency. Well, that's not going to work. Anyway, he says he governs by instinct, but he is sloppy and intemperate, easily distracted, and not all that smart. I think he's very smart. I just don't think he's intelligent about government. He spent too much time in private industry. It's another reason you want to hold at least a governorship before you become president. But in Trump's case, I was willing to make an exception. All right. He says he enjoyed the trappings of the office and the world's attention, but when entrenched and powerful interests confronted him, he backed off. You see, that was a mistake. It is no accident that the most impressive individual decision he made as president was the killing of Iran Revolutionary Guards General Qasem Soleimani, an impulse choice that the military carried out quickly before anyone could frighten him or convince him otherwise. Oh, that's interesting. The most impressive individual decision. Yeah, what about al-Baghdadi? He had him killed too. So that's what the best thing the military can do, is that if you have a huge problem and you can center that problem on one person and you kill that one person, I'm not saying killing is right, but sometimes if it saves millions of lives, yeah, maybe not such a bad idea, right? So killing one person as opposed to bombing entire villages or holding a war for 20 years, starving everybody. Iraq is not better off because we had two wars there. It's not. It's worse off. Never should have been there. Now, if we want to help people, you know, either unelect or remove Saddam Hussein, you know, that's up to individual groups and people if they want to do that. It shouldn't be government policy, though. All right. Then he says, but 2023 is not 2016 or even 2020. He says the elite right is ready to launch a full-on attack on the administrative state, for it has seen that Democrats are ready to use the levers of unelected government in unprecedented ways. And I'm going to include Brandon in that as unelected government. So the elite right, I guess that's me. We'll see. I'm already launching a full-on attack. I just need a lot more listeners and a lot more people sending bills. And we already have a blueprint for a free nation in all our bills. That's what we do here. Then it says the Biden administration tried to use the COVID emergency. I shouldn't say Biden administration. My apologies. The Brandon insurrection tried to use the COVID emergency to wipe out hundreds of billions of dollars in student debt as a gift to their supporters, or as I call it, graduate student welfare. Even more strikingly, it used the Centers for Disease Control, that would be the CDC, to keep property owners from exercising their rights and evicting tenants. Yeah, that was illegal too. And of course, it sued OSHA to force companies to enforce its obscene messenger RNA jab mandates. That was illegal too. So you cannot expect an illegal government to operate legally because they're already an illegal government. Once you've broken the law to steal the White House, then it doesn't matter what you do because you don't care because you've already broken the law to take the White House. So breaking the law further, that's like a bank robber getting a parking ticket. That, you know, the kind of thing that the government, the illegal administration doing now, that's about what it's like. So the bank robbery was stealing the White House. The parking ticket is all these little policies. So they don't care about the parking ticket because they already robbed the bank. Okay. They don't care about the little illegalities they do because they already stole the White House. They stole the entire government. So they don't care. You need to understand that if you want to understand what's going on. Then it says, Donald Trump, too, has seen for himself the way the public health mandates and the press used COVID to manipulate him and the United States. No kidding. If I were advising him, it wouldn't have happened. But then again, he might not have taken my advice. I probably would have said very similar things to what Peter Navarro and Scott Atlas were saying. If you don't remember those folks, then go back and look at the history books. It says, and not just on a policy level, nor just from the lockdown or mask or school closing or testing policies he was forced to accept. Well, he wasn't forced to accept those. It says, Trump, he saw it personally. He lived through COVID, beating it back in a few days, and he told the world not to be too afraid. For this bravery, the left pilloried him. Yeah, well, he should have stuck with Dr. Zelenko. If he stuck with Dr. Zelenko, Dr. Atlas, and then the honest doctors, the real doctors, the ones who had the cure for COVID, instead of the vaccine, mafia, then he would have been fine, but he didn't do that. He basically went with the enemy as opposed to the right folks. All right. Then it says, and not just the policy level, not just from the lockdowns, but all right, there we go. Then it says, now Trump has felt the government's power for himself. Oh, there we go. That's interesting. In the most direct and painful way of all, in a way that few people of his wealth ever do. Yeah, that's interesting. The Leviathan has come for him to take his freedom for espionage or murder or treason or rape. No. For the crime of contesting an election and insisting that he would not accept its results. Well, the results are wrong. Nobody with a brain accepts them. Democrats accept them because they got what they wanted. They got a stolen election. They knew that Brandon couldn't beat Trump. Everybody knows that Brandon couldn't beat Trump. That's not a secret. And why the Republican gelding, weenie baby butt wipes don't bring that out is something I find quite fascinating. Everybody knows that Brandon couldn't beat Trump. Everybody knows that. That's why they stole the election. And you know they stole the election because of these elaborate plans. I mean, there's, you know, they just found out the John Eastman trials, reading Gateway Pundit. Another 150,000 stolen votes have been found. Well, Brandon's only winning these states by like 10, 15,000 votes. You know, they get just enough to get over the line. Oh, you know, because they don't want to risk too much. They don't want to make it obvious, right, that they're stealing the election. So they have him win by just a little tiny amount. Oh, he still knows it's stolen. Everybody knows. The left knows that Brandon could never beat Trump. They know that. That's why they stole the election. Given that Trump appears to have a solid shot at winning the next election, that's interesting, he is running now neck and neck with the apparition known as Joseph Biden. The apparition. This turn of events has infuriated him and his supporters. Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. Come back to this. I missed him 1 second. He says, the Leviathan has come for him, not to take to take his freedom. For, you know, it says, for espionage or murder or treason or rape? No. For the crime of contesting an election and insisting that he would not accept its results. Though the results are the problem, but the results aren't really the results. See, that's the flaw in all this reasoning. You know, they said, well, you're trying to overturn the election. You don't accept the election results. Well, that's because we don't accept the election. You know, it goes back further. And there's a difference. They're saying, well, you have to accept the results. Well, the results are flawed. The results are the problem. I don't have to accept the results. I don't have to accept the election. I don't have to accept anything about this because it's all a bunch of crime, right? Then it says, though he did indeed accept its results after the foolish riot he encouraged on January 6th. Okay, that's where you're wrong. He did not encourage a riot. What he encouraged, what everybody encouraged who was a Trump supporter and anybody and all of us here at Action Radio, the thing we encouraged was that we wanted to see Congress challenge the states that had two slates of electors. How many times do I have to say that? January 6th, Trump supporters went to Congress to make sure that that challenge happened. And the left used them to provide exactly the opposite result, to prevent that challenge from happening. That's the coup. That's the brilliance of the coup. They're very intelligent. They did a terrible thing extremely well. The coup is taking Trump supporters, getting them into the Capitol building, saying that they are the insurrection, when the real insurrection was denying the challenge so that nobody could challenge the Brandon and Trump electors from the battleground states, starting with Arizona. That's how it worked. Article says, given that Trump appears to have a solid shot at winning, I think I already read that, winning the election, he is running now neck and neck with the apparition known as Joe Biden, because Joe Biden's not really there anymore. Joe Biden, you know, the frail old man that's walking around is not the former Joe Biden. It's a frail old man. This turn of events has infuriated him and his supporters. Meanwhile, the elite right has staked its ground. Last month, the New York Times explained, what's the elite right? Trump and allies forged plans to increase presidential power in 2025. Oh, yeah, right. It says the former president and his backers aim to strengthen the power of the White House and limit the independence of federal agencies. Well, that'd be a good thing. See, federal agencies are not supposed to be independent. They're supposed to follow the law. They're supposed to create regulations under law. They're not supposed to be independent. There's nothing independent about federal agencies. They're under the executive, and the executive is overseen by Congress. So J.D. Rucker gets it wrong occasionally. That was one of them. Then this is what was stunning about the article was that the Republicans quoted in it did not hide their plans to attack the underpinnings of the modern domestic federal government, the agencies that operate mostly independently of the White House. See, that's the problem. They're under the White House, but they operate independently of the White House. That's why you shut them down and you fire everybody. Then it says, why didn't they hide their radicalism? Because they want a mandate if Trump wins. They don't want Congress to say that Trump didn't explain his goals ahead of time. Well, I'm not sure people really follow all that. Then it says, now, again, one can agree or disagree with the wisdom of these ideas. As one person emailed me, if you're a Republican, making agencies and the Justice Department creatures of the White House is a wonderful idea as long as you plan to win every presidential election for eternity. Yeah, and I've always said that. You know, when people say, well, we need Trump to ride in with the military and take over and fix things. Well, that's a military dictatorship. Well, what if Brandon was riding in with the military or Obama was riding back in, saying, ah, for the good of the country, I'm bringing the military and I'm taking over. For the good of the country, I'm taking over. Yeah, no, I don't think so. So you got to be consistent. Then it says, but make no mistake, if Trump wins in 2024, which he will, I believe, he will take no prisoners in 2025, neither will his appointees. Yeah. See, that's the thing that is most intriguing to me. That's the big deal. When Trump wins, not only who is he going to appoint to the cabinet, but who's going to be running all the departments all the way down. See, Trump knows that, see, in the corporate world, you appoint your vice presidents, and the vice presidents, you know, follow your policy all the way down the chain. That's management, right? Vice presidents to district managers to managers, general managers to supervisors, supervisors to workers. That's the general hierarchy of a corporation. But in government, it doesn't work that way, right? So you've got cabinet, you've got the president, then you've got the cabinet people. Well, are they following the president or not? Are they creating their own little kingdoms, as J. Edgar Hoover did with the FBI, right? So then you got the department heads, you know, so you got the Department of Justice, that's headed by the Attorney General. But then you've got these different branches of it, the FBI, the DEA, the ATF, all of which we could get rid of, actually, you know, but they're all run by people. You know, it's like NAIAD, the thing that Dr. Fascist runs. That's part of NIH, which is the National Institute for Health, which is part of Health and Human Services, which has a cabinet position. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be really interesting to see who Trump appoints. He's going to have to appoint some real kick-butt people. And they're going to have people below them that they can trust and people below them they can trust. And they basically have to kick out all the leftists from government. That's going to be the trick. Kicking the leftists out and have America First people replace basically the entire executive branch. Be nice to have some of the judges replaced too. Then it says, lastly, we're almost done. And then we got Bianca Von Krieg. We're going to talk progressive stuff. He says, but make no mistake, if Trump, all right, there we go. The federal government will likely look and act very different. It will be smaller and more politicized. That's good. Well, let's see about politicized, but smaller is good. And do not be surprised if Trump turns foreign policy upside down. Well, I'm hoping he does. Everything, including pulling out of NATO, there you go, ending all support for Ukraine, there you go, will be on the table. Yes, he needs to do that. Remove the UN, move him to Switzerland, New Geneva, or Brussels. Everybody else is in Brussels. So you move the UN to Brussels with the European Union. You get out of NATO. You end all support for any foreign war that isn't a direct threat to the United States and say, hey, you know, we'll support you, sort of, but, you know, moral support. But we're not going to fund the war for you. Then it says, all the people who have hated Trump since 2016 will figure this out if they haven't already. The stakes are high, which means that the 2024 election is likely to make the last two look like pillow fights, especially if Trump and Biden are still a coin flip a year from now. Okay, so everything you hear about Biden, I don't believe is true. It says, and then it says, it will be the angriest political cycle since 1968. Can't wait. Then it says, and 1968 was a very bad year for the United States. Yeah, it was a bad year. But 2024, I don't believe it's going to be a bad year. Hopefully political assassinations will not be part of it, like it was for Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King. Hopefully. We shall see. It's going to be – hang on, folks, as what was it, Betty Davis said in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Hang on, everybody. It's going to be a bumpy night. Anyway, I'll be right back. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car? If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive. Conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street in the historic district of Milton, Florida, right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. Call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stars Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road. Ask them about Firestone tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stars Automotive. I go there. You should too. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's GRAITH care.com. You can email them at greatcare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news! Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. So I still don't have Bianca's theme yet, although I have picked the music out, so we're going to get there. I just thought I'd play America the Beautiful. We did this once before earlier in the show. And this is my time to, get philosophical. Because we have a very interesting country. We are in incredible times right now. We're in a transition. And I think we're going to be just fine. I mean, the country's going to hold together. The country survives the personalities. It survives all the craziness and all the things that are going on. But I think one of the most interesting things, and this is why I like having Bianca von Krieg on the show, is that we can take two people who disagree on pretty much everything and have a really great time talking. I mean, she's rapidly becoming one of my favorite people. And so this is America. This is probably one of the purest expressions of America, is the fact that we get along and we can talk, and it doesn't matter that we disagree. And what it really comes down to is, do you love your country? Do you want the best for the people in it? And then the only real disagreement is how we get there. And so I think that's kind of fascinating. Anyway, Bianca, good morning. How you doing?
Hi, Greg. Good to be back. We've got some good headlines for you today. Let's just start off with the first one.
Oh, please.
Mayor Breed's Pod Life Breed Ducks. She's back again.
She's breeding. You made that joke. You're talking about her breeding. Mayor Breed is breeding.
I don't know.
No,
her junk might be old. President Biden. I got a lot of B's in this one. President Biden bogarts Bay Area boys in blue. Criminals of San Francisco told, hey, just be cool. Hateful flower power. Homo hotheads in the Castro tell homeless, make funds, not love. No bomb for you. The Uniparty told to talk to the hand over backdoor funding of the financial Vietnam that is Ukraine. And Dianne Feinstein has the last word as she gives the finger to environmentalists. The Prince of Darkness is said to have responded, sucks to be you, dude. All this and more from the left coast. This is the Progressive Report, and I am Bianca von Krieg.
That's fabulous. You're the only one that does that, that has a whole summary of these things. I started to write them down. I thought, you know what? You've already gotten them written down. Let's just take them one by one.
I'll send it to you. I write it out.
Well, you can. No, but you've got it right there. I'm pretty spontaneous. You know? Yeah. I'm good at the instant reaction. So most of the articles I read on the air, I don't read in advance just because it's more spontaneous and more fun. And I'll go, oh, well, that's interesting. You know, anyway. So what was the first one? Let's just take them in order.
The first one is, remember the Pod Life story we reported on last time?
Oh my God, those things
are
horrible.
Okay,
you think
even
tiny houses
three,
are tiny? These things are like tiny.
Three
tiny
hours
houses.
After it aired, San Francisco's Department of Building Inspection launched an investigation into the developer of the pods. As to determine its habitability and livability. So something happened there. So people are
Who designed these things? Was it a manufacturer? Are these domestically made? Are they foreign imports? Where do they come from?
That's a good question. There's a couple of things going on. It's bought from a manufacturer, and then this landlord has somehow warehoused them into this, like, apartment building that he owns. I think it's one of these older downtown buildings that have just been hollowed out, and there's been some common facilities engineer, and then there's just, I don't know, probably bears a look down there to see what's actually going on. But the thing is that these pods lack even the basic luxuries that one is afforded to even in prison in the forms of a window and a toilet and a sink.
Yeah, do they have running water?
There's enough room for a twin bed. No, not in the pod itself. You have to go to, like, down the hall to the bathroom or something like that.
So are these pods in buildings, or are they separate things on the street by themselves, like independent little structures?
I think it's in a warehouse building or something like that.
So we're actually warehousing people. Didn't I see that in The Matrix?
You might remember this. You know the old Mint building down on Fifth and Mission? It's in that area that they've tried to gentrify it a little bit. And
that's
so
a bad area.
Some,
Sixth Street, Fifth, or is it Fifth Avenue? Fifth Street?
No, it's Fifth. It's Fifth. And,
yeah,
it's
Sixth is bad too.
The old Chronicle building that Yahoo bought out.
Huh.
And
that's like the tenderloin. It's like a mini tenderloin.
No, it's not really the tenderloin. It's kind of like armpit.
No, it's not the tenderloin, but it's a bad area. A lot of drugs, a lot of homeless people. It's kind of crazy. Yeah. And it's right near the hotel,
that's why they put the pods
funny.
There and not the marina.
Right across the street from Union Square, pretty much. It's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's San Francisco. And then Biden strolled into town last week, as you guys have probably heard. But here's the thing. We counted over 100 SFPD cops were diverted to the petty needs of this one individual. If you go to our YouTube channel, Bianca for San Francisco, and you type in Biden, you'll see his motorcade pulling away, and there's obviously like 100 cops driving alongside, in addition to his Secret Service Army. And not to mention that they had four motorcycle guys on every block between the Fairmont as it rolls down California all the way to its to their destination in Seacliff. So that's a lot of, like, cops.
Is this normal? I mean, we've had people go to California for fundraising before. They usually end up, you know, down Atherton or someplace. You know, they don't actually go in San Francisco unless they're like Nancy Pelosi's place or Diane Feinstein's
house. I think there might be some raised thing. But what kind of got us was the thing is, that thing is they call it a limousine the Beast, and it's basically like an armored tank. It's got anywhere from 5 to 8 inch of armor plating, and the glass is bulletproof and can stop a 44 magnum round.
Right.
44 magnum round at point blank range. So, you know, between that and a Secret Service, it seemed more about like just butt kissing to the president, really, than actually protecting
him. Think of the cost of this too. And so, as
especially
since
they're going on and on and on and on and on about police staffing shortages. And by the way, we looked up the stats that day. There were two rapes and about 16 car break-ins less than a mile from where that from the Fairmont Hotel where he was staying.
Wow. But like I said, from a progressive point of view, the money that was spent, you know, see, Air Force One is what, $5,000 a minute. It's some ridiculous amount of money, right? This thing is really
actually we're gonna jump to that, and we're gonna cover that in the Dianne Feinstein.
Okay, well, hold on off on that, but, because the whole Midwest the strikers thing, he was there for a short time. That was the pretense. That's like the justification. They have to have official business for Air Force One. So he makes a 58-second speech. That's the official business. Now the whole trip is justified. Then he goes out to California, you know, to raise money. So I'll let you fill in the gaps on that, but that's what I'm looking at.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was a really embarrassing and frankly, you know, autocratic like visual to see. People lined up. A lot of people gave him the bird and just kept driving on. Moving on to our next story here, we have the homo hotheads McCastro telling the homeless, make funds, not love. And what they're doing is that normally where people would sleep on the street, they've installed like these street planters, you know, to put flowers or trees in or things like that. They're actually buying them themselves, putting them on the street. And this is all led by gay Jewish Orange County carpetbagger supervisor Raphael Mandelman, the pride of equal opportunity self-loathers. And it's they're doing it not just in the Castro, they're also trying to do it in the Mission too. These are all been like white gentrified neighborhoods,
right?
And they're essentially trying to push the poor people out without actually doing right by them. So you know, what really galls me about this whole, you know, phony flower power business out here is that this is exactly the kind of thing that they would attribute to Republicans or MAGAs or Donald Trump. And there's none of that here. There's no guys there. There's no scapegoating that they can be done. It's just them and their greed and their disdain for their fellow humans. So, you know, next time somebody from San Francisco tries to get on their high horse, you can knock them down a peg. And that goes for any listener.
And it's interesting that you are as critical of Democrats and their failures as a progressive as I am of conservatives and Republicans as an anti-federalist. So it's a very interesting thing that we see the faults in people that are supposed to be, you know, our people, our party. And I don't have associated.
Yeah.
You listen to my shows. I'm far more critical of Republicans. I mean, I know what the Democrats are doing, and obviously I don't believe in most of their policies either, but that's not the point, is that I expect more from the Republicans, as you probably expect more from the Democrats, and you're not getting it.
Yeah. No, we're not. There's been a significant departure, and that's why they're now, you know, relabeling these new centrists as the Uniparty, which is just, you know, a polite term for deep state, really.
Well, yeah, it's the same thing, but both sides use it. You know, Matt Gaetz talks about the Uniparty.
Yeah.
He would be on the conservative end of the House. So the House Freedom Caucus, Gaetz and the 8 that voted against McCarthy, or as we call him, Kevin Deep State, you know, they use the term Uniparty. And Progressive Caucus, I'm sure, uses the term Uniparty for the Democrats and Republicans that are basically the Uniparty, the Deep State.
Right.
Yeah.
And
okay.
They're not doing anything for their respective parties' core values. They're more like operating as a kind of corporate shell for the government. And that brings us to our next headline, the no bomb for you. Uniparty told to talk to the hand over the backdoor funding of the financial Vietnam that is the Ukraine. No aid for the world's pouting problem child, Vladimir Zelensky, his American and EU won't buy him his new Xbox and Nouveau Castro chic fatigues. Zelensky served in the military.
Who writes your material? This is really good. I mean, we might just slow down and kind of.
I write it myself.
Bit.
You know.
Oh, it's great. This is fabulous. I love it. Just the
oh, there's more
using.
Here.
I'm sure.
Zelensky, who never served in the military, compensates by starting his day with hours of Call of Duty with a bowl of Cheerios in his lap.
Oh,
so.
Nice.
He's not getting any more money. Apparently, the EU just kicked down today. They gave him like another $50 billion. But the Freedom Caucus, you know, had their day in the sun, and they got the Ukrainian aid disentangled from the omnibus bill, which is what they were using to try and backdoor this money in. Well, people are starving and dying in our streets from fentanyl, and they're sending money to this, you know, problem child across the world.
Well, tell me about that for a second, because I want to go into that a little bit, because I don't know that much about this deal. So as I understand it, the continuing resolution in order to get it did not have Ukraine funding, but it didn't matter because there's some deal with McDeep State and Schumer and Biden anyway. Do you know?
Well, that's what they're
saying.
But it's still going to be a victory even if it passes, because then everyone's going to be, you know, on the record, point blank, either saying I want funding for this or I don't want funding for this. Before, they could kind of hide within the bundle and say, hey, there's a lot of stuff going on and I just wanted to move this thing along. They can't do that anymore. They don't have that political cover. I'm skeptical of whether or not Biden can pull off something like that, especially what's going on. Obviously, the Freedom Caucus is going to oppose it. Most of the Progressive Caucus will oppose it. So that could create some problems right there. I think that's about at least 40 people right there.
Yeah, I was just curious. That was my next question. How many people are in the Progressive Caucus? Because I know there's about 20 members of the House Freedom Caucus. I don't even know if Matt Gaetz is in them, but he would be like a sympathizer, or he'd be a very similar point of view. But I think of like Andy Biggs, Scalise, you know, Boebert, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Jim Jordan, you know, the real Massey, the and they actually went against what Gaetz did, which is kind of interesting. But the Freedom Caucus is the most conservative
Jim
American
first
pro-Trump.
From the herd.
Okay.
Jim peeled off from the herd. He actually stopped by McDeep State on this one.
Well, he supports McDeep State. Now here's something I explained earlier, and I'm sure you thought of this or talked about it, but the power of the speaker, and Nancy Pelosi was legendary for wielding power. What people don't get is that the speaker holds all the committee chairs, the subcommittee chairs, all the leadership positions, everything in power. If you want to advance in Congress, the only way you can do it is if your party is the majority and the speaker, you know, rewards you. So you got to kiss the butt of the speaker. So anybody that goes against the speaker has a chance, if that speaker makes it. If, you know, in other words, you got to bite off the head of the snake, because if you don't, you bite the tail, snake's going to get you, you know, and that's how it works.
You know,
so
if you go for the king, you better kill the king. Yeah.
Better kill. Exactly. Yeah. So anybody that votes against McDeep State or votes against Pelosi or anybody who's speaker, they're not going to get a committee chair. Their career's done. They might as well go, you know, run for governor or something, or run for something else, because they're not going to go anywhere in Congress, because speakers are traditionally vindictive. And that was not talked about yesterday on the news
Pelosi
at all.
Pelosi was, so, yeah.
Yeah, well, she was incredible.
Pelosi was
vindictive.
She's a very nasty woman. That's what they call her, nasty Pelosi.
Yeah.
But I don't think Gaetz has that kind of calculation going on in his mind. I think it's all very one-dimensional to him. A promise was made. It wasn't kept. Therefore, this is the reaction. This is the response. And I think a lot of the progressives are along the same way, too. They really didn't like, you know, McDeep State to begin with. They reluctantly accepted him, you know.
Yeah.
This all begs the further question is, you know, okay, fine, you got your vacate. You know, you got your vacate. Mm-hmm. But now who's going to replace him? And that's what they're trying to figure out right now. And
well,
he might even end up coming back.
No, I don't think so. He says he's not going to come back, which means he wants to come back. I mean, you know how that works. But what do you think is going to happen? What do you think is going to happen over this little recess? So the first thing that the temporary speaker does is call a recess and sends everybody home. Well, to me, that's like phone call arm twisting time. So all the backroom deals are going to be during this recess. You know, so if they're still in Congress, they wouldn't be able to do that as much, because they could talk to their fellow representatives, and they have open caucus and they have meetings. House would still be in session. So this is like the time under the Capitol when the Trump supporters were above on January 6th. This is arm twisting time. And so, although we probably disagree on January 6th, but what's going to be happening now? You know, we've got four or five days where they're all going to go home. Well, they're not going to be sitting around doing nothing. Someone's going to be talking to them.
No. They're furiously working right now. They're trying to figure out who they can get that either one, all the Republicans can agree on, or at least they're 218, or who the Republicans and some Democrats might agree on. That's what the calculation they're doing is now.
Then they
have to figure out what's it going to cost them.
Yeah.
That's what they have to figure out.
Well. See, the Democrats would love to sabotage the Republicans, but they don't want to help them. just as the Republicans want to sabotage the Democrats, they don't want to help them, but they're not as organized. So the Democrats are organized. So the Democrat vote is one block, right? I mean, it's pretty well all conditioned. They all know what to do. They all vote as a block. Hakeem Jeffries basically directs that block. So is that block, you know, going to vote for a Republican? No. Would they vote to get rid of a Republican?
I don't know. There's been some rumblings that the progressives, just like I've told you before and over again, progressives have more in common with, you know, some of the Freedom Caucus than they do with the party.
Absolutely.
Their
I agree with you there.
Themselves.
But
because, you know, politics is not – is my connection okay, by the way?
No, you're fine.
Like cut off once in a – okay.
No, you're fine. That's me interrupting. I'm sorry.
No, I think it's my phone and it kind of drops like some of your packets.
You sound fine.
Okay, that's good to know. So, like I said, politics is not a spectrum. It's not that one dimensional. It's more like a three dimensional sphere. It kind of just wraps around. And at some point, you can kind of come. You can go far enough around the Earth and come back to right back to where you started.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, to some other places. Like, so I think that there's been a lot of, like, you know, hinting in the news. There's been a lot of AOC interviews asking her opinion about all this, which is usually a sign that something is happening.
Why her?
The
how is she the lightning rod?
She's considered the de facto face of the progressives, even though it's Rashida Tlaib or Pramila Jayapal. I keep forgetting which one is which. And she might even go against them too. You know, she might even go, the Progressive Caucus might decide to just stay, you know, with the party line, and in which case AOC could take a few members of the caucus like Jamal and maybe Ilhan, and say, you know, let's try and get something for, you know, that we've really been looking to get for a long time, maybe Medicare for All or something like that, and see what kind of deal we can make with the Republicans. There could be all kinds of things going on. This would not be the first time that the progressives have, you know, rubbed their party's nose in it. Like, remember during the Build Back Better negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I wouldn't put I wouldn't eliminate a lot of things at this point. There's a lot of fun things that are going on. I really wish I could be a fly in those rooms. They could sell tickets to those things.
Here's what I see happening. The progressives and the Freedom Caucus get together when it's time to oppose something, but it's different when it's time to come together to vote for something, because that's a real difference to show up. So the United is against wars like Iraq, Ukraine, Afghanistan. So we unite on that, but we unite for different reasons, okay? Whereas something like voting for a Republican speaker, you know, both – so the United part is they don't want Kevin McCarthy. No, neither the progressives nor the Freedom Caucus want McCarthy. So that's obvious. But would they – they're united in that, but would they unite over a Republican speaker? See, I don't think so. I think that's where the disagreement is going to come, and this is where the Progressive Caucus – you know, because, they don't want to be looking
on what
to
we
support
can get,
Republicans.
You know? It depends on what we could get. If we could get, like, something really big, like, you know, I'm just throwing it out there, like the Green New Deal, that would be a huge coup. And then no one would remember the fact that that AOC voted for a Republican, and they would remember the fact that AOC led the charge to get, you know, the Green New Deal. And that would be the legacy. And it's not a bad way to go.
But the caucus, Freedom Caucus, would never go for that, and I understand why, because I would never go for that. I mean, I'm completely against the Green Deal. I'm for burning organic fuels.
I was just using it as an example.
Yeah, okay. When there's not as much else going on. We need to do that. We need to do a climate change chat, too. So we have some chats
but
coming.
The point is they could get some really cherry policy in place that they've been looking to get for a long time.
Why?
Because of these centrist Democrats.
So you're saying that the House Freedom Caucus would get some of the votes of the Progressive Caucus in order, and they'd make a deal for something the Progressive Caucus wanted, so that they would get a more conservative speaker, or like an America First speaker, as opposed to a deep state speaker. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, it's possible.
Huh. So what do you think
there
the
might
House
even
Freedom
be some
Caucus?
Contingencies. Yeah. There might even be some further contingencies too, like you know, nobody messes with the committee assignments or anything like that until the next election or for speaker or something like that.
But what could they agree on though? I think, again, we come back to what they're united against. So if there could be no funding not only for a Ukraine war, but any foreign war, because it seems like every president except Trump has gotten us into some kind of stupid war. You know, Bush the elder, Bush the younger had Iraq, and the younger's war was absolutely insane. Afghanistan, there's no reason for that. But I'll go back to Vietnam and Korea. You know, the Korea was split, and then they went to war. What a surprise. Vietnam was split, then they went to war. You know, and then we had Iraq, Afghanistan, and Ukraine. There's no reason for these wars.
Yes.
These wars are wars of military-industrial complex money. These wars to make
absolutely.
Money on death. Now, this is where the progressives and the Freedom Caucus can agree. So if they could come up with an agreement on that, saying, okay, we're not going to fund this anymore. We're not going to have nation-building wars. We're not going to have – we're going to have a war. It's going to be a real war with a real enemy that's fighting us. If not, we're not going to do it. So I would – you know what would be interesting to do? If they both agreed to pull out of NATO, for example. That might be something they could agree on.
Yeah, that's a huge slippery slope. I don't think it's something that's really worthwhile. I've heard this on my end too. That NATO is just a constant troublemaker.
It is. NATO caused the Ukraine-Russian war. Because NATO membership.
Yeah,
is
I don't disbelieve that, but you know, it's also kind of it's this nice shield that we have against full on thermonuclear war. So,
but we've got the nuclear deterrent anyway. So we've got the nuclear weapons. We don't need NATO to use those nuclear weapons. And the only reason we would use those nuclear weapons against Russia is if they use nuclear weapons against us. The problem with NATO. Is that now we have to use nuclear weapons if they use them against Ukraine, if Ukraine's a member of NATO. Well, that's not a position we want to be in.
Something more
closer,
I would say, is Poland. Yeah.
Okay.
Poland could, yeah.
Well, Poland shouldn't be a member.
And now there's trouble with Serbia, too. And,
Well, nothing's happened in Serbia the last 100 years, has there?
I know, right? They can't, I don't know what it is about those.
Those
parts
Balkans?
Of the country, they just can't get along with each other.
They've hit each other for centuries. Yugoslavia was a joke. You can't put Croatia, Serbia, Bosnia, Macedonia. You can't put those countries together and expect a good result.
Yeah, they need their own deal, apparently. So.
Yeah. Yeah. They, you know, got centuries of hatred there.
Centuries of hatred.
Alexander
Same
the Great
with Israel and Palestine. It's just nuts.
Yeah.
They just can't seem to behave themselves and just share.
Well, that's a whole other conversation. I'm not going to disagree with you on that now, you know, as much as I could. But that's a good conversation for us to have as well.
Yeah.
Let's get back to you said something, the homo hotheads. You never really explained that. I want to go back to that just a little bit. And then you said the gay, Jewish, Orange County something or others. You've got these fascinating terms that I've never heard. So I want to explore this a little bit as we get – and then we'll get to all the stories.
You want to go back to that? Okay.
What is a homo hothead? I don't think anybody's ever heard that term before.
Well, that's just our colorful little euphemism for, you know, homosexuals who are just kind of angry at people for being homeless. And
like it's their fault? That's interesting.
Yeah. And so this is kind of a departure from the normal kind of, you know, happy homosexual that's depicted in the media, just free love and kindness and more. And it's actually taken a very, very ugly turn out here.
Huh.
And it's unfortunate that, that these kind of like uniparty forces they are effectively criminalizing poverty and weaponizing crime to drive wedges between us. Between like, you know, people in the LGBT community, and it's kind of like the haves and the have-nots.
Yeah, I was going to say, is there like a gay aristocracy?
Minorities in general.
Is there an elite gay aristocracy that kind of looks down upon other LGBT folks?
Yeah, definitely. I think we covered that one of the other shows, too, with the Women's Direct International or something like that. There was they had a convention at the Hilton, and these are women that are known as TERFs, and that's what's called trans exclusionary radical feminists. and they don't believe transgender people are, you know, the gender that they're identifying as. And so, yeah, there are divisions within the LGBT community.
Right.
There are certainly economic ones. I mean, you can look at guys like Tim Cook, who's the CEO of Apple, and he's gay.
Mm-hmm. And, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot more like him, too. There's, you know, Ryan Murphy down in Los Angeles, who produces all those, like, gay-themed shows, like, you know, Glee and things like that, which I was on.
Oh.
And, yeah.
Singing or acting?
I can't sing unless you want to torture North Koreans.
Okay, so it must have been acting then. Okay, fine.
It was all lip sync, you know. And I kept getting offers from musical theaters. Like, I don't sing and I don't really care for theater.
Wow.
This guy Raphael Mandelman is a real piece of work. He's not even from San Francisco. He's gay and Jewish, and apparently he's an equal opportunity self-loather because he's undermining both groups by his constant selling out. And
that was interesting, Jim. Gay, like, Jewish, Orange County, and what was the rest of it? You had a really
carpetbagger.
Carpetbagger, that's what it was.
Yeah. A lot of people, I don't think there's one person on our board who was from San Francisco except for the mayor. And everybody else, they're most of them from New York. And but
that's a lot of California politicians. How many California politicians? Let's say Dianne Feinstein was from New York. I think Nancy Pelosi was, what, New York or New Jersey?
Baltimore.
She's Baltimore. Okay. So was Feinstein New York? Yeah. Where she's not native San Francisco.
No, I believe she was born here.
Oh, she was?
But she went to a Catholic school, which is weird.
Barbara Boxer was East Coast.
Jewish.
Feinstein's Jewish. Boxer's, well, obviously.
Southern California.
You give her a name like Feinstein. Right. Yeah, that's a giveaway. Barbara Boxer? Where is she from? She was East Coast.
I don't know.
Willie Brown was Texas.
I think Willie Brown was from Texas.
Yeah, Willie Brown's out of state. But he's a conservative state, which is kind of interesting. Other prominent, Gavin Newsom.
Because Willie Brown used to be a used car salesman. Seriously.
Hey, we all got to start somewhere. McCarthy said he owned a sandwich shop. So, you know, I don't have a problem with people working.
I think once McCarthy gets kicked out, he'll end up being the manager of the biggest Fuddruckers in Bakersfield.
Yeah, it'll be McCarthy's. Oh, that's Bakersfield. I've actually been to Bakersfield several times. I tried to get a radio show there. It was just too far from San Francisco, and circumstances were that I couldn't move, unfortunately. But Bakersfield's an interesting place. It's like a different world down there. You've got oil. You've got a desert. You know, it's just the bottom end of the farmland. It's separated by these mountains, the San Gabriel Mountains, from L.A. So you've got the L.A., you know, total liberal Los Angeles area. And then across the hills, you've got this other world, like an alien planet. It's kind of like the moon. You know, it's Bakersfield. It's hot.
Yeah.
It's dry. It has got oil fields. So there's some real contrast in California people don't see. So that's where McCarthy's from. He's from Bakersfield, huh? That's interesting.
Well, I just look forward to seeing him wear some wacky suspenders with a bunch of bling, you know, tacked onto it and singing happy birthday songs to people.
Yeah, Buck Owens. Isn't Buck Owens from Bakersfield? Didn't he have a big place down there?
Well, actually, I was going to mention a good point about Newsom. It astounds me how nobody seems, you know, in any way surprised that he's like, he was formerly married to MAGA succubus Kimberly Guilfoyle.
Okay, let's talk about that. That's not that well known. So Kimberly Guilfoyle, she's a lawyer, and I think she's working for Trump right now. So she was married. How did those two get together?
Well, she used to be a district attorney, an assistant district attorney here in San Francisco.
Oh,
and
what was he at that?
That
point?
Was right around the time that I think he was mayor or supervisor, one of those two things.
Okay.
But that's when he also started cheating on her too. I couldn't imagine how he'd be dumb enough to
cheat
on her.
He's got a blonde wife now, right? So he's married. Do they have kids or no?
He's got a blonde. Yeah.
That's almost required. It's like the black football players that have white wives. It's kind of like, you know, required. So So Gavin Newsom is a blonde wife. All right. So he was married.
Well,
he was
I remember
married
that scene from I think it was one of those Al Capone movies where somebody tells Al Capone, stop dating these Italian women. They've got the hot blood. You need yourself an Irish woman. They won't cheat on you.
Oh, really?
Maybe Gavin took some of that advice.
Oh, wow. So
it's the hot blood that was in Kimberly Goose Boyle.
Well, what's her background?
Yeah.
Is she Latina by chance? I don't
know. She's Puerto Rican.
Puerto Rican and Irish. Oh,
yeah.
Great combination. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's calm.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. She still hasn't married Donald Trump Jr. either, which seems very strange. Is she holding out for a better deal or something like that?
How much better does it get?
If
you're doing it for money, if it's just for money, so she's living with Donald Trump Jr.?
Yeah.
They're just
shacked up.
They're shacked up. Okay. Yeah. So shacked up.
They bought a place in Florida.
Wait a minute. This is getting interesting. What kind of person? Now, actually, I see look-wise, they're fairly similar. Gavin Newsom and Donald Jr. kind of have similar looks. They're tall, dark.
Yeah, they're good-looking guys. Yeah.
Yeah, they're good-looking guys. Okay, right. So it's interesting. So she went from, but politically, they're about as far apart as you get. So what attracted her to Newsom? Well, you tell me.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's what I'm saying is that I don't buy this whole opposites attract thing. I think there's a lot more to Newsom than's going on. I mean, we still don't have a wealth tax in California, which would solve so many problems. And that's kind of a liberal go-to, really. You cancel the gas taxes during inflation. That was, that's another Republican thing too. It's just what I've been saying, the whole time is that they're behaving the way that they would accuse Republicans or MAGAs or Donald Trump of behaving. They're behaving that way here, and so they're starting to show their true colors, really. So, yeah, I don't think he's much of a, anybody who calls him a progressive doesn't know what they're talking about.
Well, you led a recall against him, or you were
yeah, I got 500,000 Democrats to sign a signature. That was
so what were the major issues?
Needed.
So what don't we know about Gavin Newsom? What were the major issues? Because that, I think, people would be
just,
interested
It was
well.
Just like what I said, it was wealth disparity, income inequality, all these things that can easily be fixed. This is the wealthiest state in the richest country in the world.
Mm-hmm.
There's no excuse for these things. We're the fourth largest economy, and we can't keep the damn lights on in summer. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yep.
It's ridiculous. And so, then there's the environmental gas. I remember waking up to a red dawn one morning, and I seriously thought, okay, you've gone to hell, Bianca. And it's like, I knew I was going to hell, but I thought for other stuff. And,
you at least have a good reason, right?
Yeah, I know. And that was really disastrous. There's all the other things that he's failed to do. And polls even showed that we had during that 70% of Californians, or excuse me, like 70% of Democrats wanted another Democrat to run for that office. So, yeah, he's having problems. Cannot be allowed to advance to president. That would be extremely bad for the country. And
I think the only way he'd win is by cheating. I think that's the only way that Brandon, won the election. And like I say, I know we disagree on that, but do you see him playing well in Iowa and New Hampshire, for example? He's a California, what we think of as progressive. Now you have disagreements, which is interesting, but the most critical people are the people in your own group. The most people critical of Republicans are other Republicans. So in the same way, when the story gets out, so you need articles, you need news things, you need YouTubes, you need what you do, the stuff that I post here, but for really big, national news shows to show who Gavin Newsom really is. And they're going to find out.
That's
hopefully
what we're trying to do. But, as to whether or not he plays in Iowa, I would say, just look back to Reagan, who carried every state except Minnesota, which was Walter Mondale's state, his opponent.
Was his own state, yeah.
And then, on the other side of things, Bernie Sanders was loved in Iowa too. So, by the Democrats, by the other party. But, I think, Iowa would be pretty easy to get. The country would be a more difficult thing. And they would just be singing the same tune of, you know, give us control of the country and we'll do all these things. And, of course, they don't do any
of
them. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, some of them are unconstitutional. There's that little thing, too. Yeah. You had a bunch of other stories. I don't want to start changing any of your other stories. Did you want to
just the Feinstein one. That's it.
Yeah. Okay.
And the Feinstein one was hilarious, too, because apparently she, Dianne Feinstein has the last word as she gives the finger to environmentalists. The Prince of Darkness is said to have responded, sucks to be you, dude. So the thing is, the article is that she was flown to SFO on a quote-unquote military jet.
Mm-hmm.
And they won't describe it in any further. We sent some requests to the Andrews Air Force Base press office. We still haven't got a response. But if you look at the picture, the jet in question, the military jet, is clearly either Air Force One or Air Force Two, which is about the size of a Boeing 747.
Well, 747 is the one they usually use for Air Force One, but there's a 757 or 67. It's a twin-engine one. So if it had two engines, it's the littler one. If it had four engines, it's the big one. So 747 or
7. They're big. Both of them are big jets. They're huge.
Well, they are big jets, yeah. They're wide bodies, yeah. Yeah. So that was on the White House budget?
Yeah, that was on the taxpayer's dime. And just it's going to cost us over $1 million, and here's how we know this. According to Air Force Headquarters Air Mobility Command, they estimate the cost of flying, you know, an Air Force One or Air Force Two at $206,337 per hour. And by the way, that's 10 times the standard Boeing 747. So given that it's a five-hour flight from here to Andrews, that's easily over $1 million.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And then, on top of that, SFPD blocked traffic all the way from the airport to San Francisco. I mean, she's dead. Does she have somewhere she has to be or something?
It's not like there's an appointment waiting for her. Yeah. Well, where's she going to be buried? Is there a big funeral planned for her?
I know they stuck her in City Hall for now.
Stuck her?
I think they're having...
Is there a viewing?
There's a viewing and people can go there and look at
it. Is there a window casket or something or what?
Rotting corpse. Yeah. But and the other thing, the only people on that plane were Feinstein's daughter, Nancy Pelosi, and Nancy Pelosi's daughter, and a couple of Feinstein staffers. So I don't know why they just couldn't have, you know, let her fly back UPS or FedEx or something like that.
No, you know what they do?
I've seen
I've seen coffins put on airliners. They just put on a regular airliner.
Yeah,
so
that's
any
what they
flight...
do. That's how you do it.
Yeah.
It's just checked in with the rest of the baggage. I mean, it's not
but I've seen copies of service people loaded on.
I mean,
and they announce it. The airline says, we're transporting a service member who, you know, passed away, who served in, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan, whatever it is. I've heard, I've seen these things done. And you see the caskets, and then there's a flag, the whole bit, which is good. I mean, that's, but there's no reason she couldn't have flown back on an airliner.
Yeah, that's exactly it. There's no reason for it. I mean, there's probably like hundreds of flights every day from, that area to our
Washington
area.
To San Francisco? Yes.
Yeah. And
I'm sure
there
are dollars to San Francisco several per day. Betcha.
Maybe if she was alive, I could see, some sort of security need. But, she's dead, What the
no
hell is somebody
going
to do? Like, some Ukrainian terrorist going to like hijack her body and hold her for like, more aid
ransom.
Money or something? What?
Given Ukraine. Well, here's the question, though. If we just talk Ukraine for a second, how desperate do you think they're going to get? Because if they don't get their money, they don't have their war. And this is a warlord.
Zelensky
this is
said
a warlord situation.
Zelensky said it himself that when he came to Washington, he says, if we don't get this money, we're finished. But, like I said earlier, the EU bailed him out. They gave him another $52 billion. I guess
they're
money
finished anyway.
Come by over there. Yeah.
They were, Sun
the
Tzu,
they don't realize
the art of war.
They
were always finished.
What they really need to do is, you got to hit them at home. You got to be able to strike Moscow. And they really don't have any kind – they don't have a navy, so that's out. I mean, they've got a few boats or something, but nothing capable of, you know,
yeah, but
you know,
the
climbing
Ukraine
around
to Moscow
Europe.
Is land. It's not, there's no water
yeah,
involved.
And anything over launched, you know, from land, you know, is probably going to get sighted and destroyed. I don't know. For some reason, I can't understand these drones are making it. But, you know, I would think.
Well, no,
because
it's, hard to shoot them down. It's hard to shoot down drones. And they don't have a big radar signature. And you know, so they're hard to hit. You'd have to have, you know,
and they're
or
also
missiles.
They're also tied a little bit too, because the advanced weaponry that the United States was letting them use was under the guidelines that it not be used in a forward assault capacity.
No, because they don't want Russia to go nuclear. You know, but here's the thing: this war, if you and we've talked about this when we used to have a wonderful person on the show, Dr. Peter Pry, died a year ago August. Mm-hmm. And I think he was killed by a COVID shot. That's another discussion we can have. Anyway, he told us very clearly, because his specialty was foreign policy, nuclear weapons, electromagnetic pulse, and things like that. I've got a gazillion hours with him. He was an amazing man. Anyway, what he told us, we went over the 6 points that Putin said, you know, we're not going to go to war if we get these 6 points. And the most important one was not having Ukraine be in NATO. That's why they went to war, because they didn't want the whole NATO, you know, armada, you know, against Russia. But the Ukraine could never beat Russia in a war. Never. We already knew that.
Yeah,
there was no outcome other than Ukraine loses. Given that, given Sun Tzu, the art of war,
been,
you know, knowing yourself and knowing your enemy.
Kick gloves.
Well, you know, like, they've been limited. They haven't been. There's no tactical nuclear weapons. They're not trying for a surrender. Have they demanded Ukraine surrender? No. They've just demanded that they leave the Russian ethnic people in Ukraine alone. So there's no good people here. You got Nazis on the eastern side of the country. You got communists on the western side of the country. It's not a good situation. You got left on left again. It's just sort of like a repeat of Nazi Germany and communist Russia. This is not good. There is no good outcome.
Bad situation.
No one's going to win this.
And
so given
there's no real exit strategy that they're
right. So given that we knew ahead of time, before the first shot was fired, that nobody was going to win, that Ukraine was not going to defeat Russia, that it was a total waste. You know, the only possible outcome was that people would die. That's it. That's the only possible outcome.
Yes.
So why even start that fight? Unless you make money off the death of Ukrainians and you don't care. So now
well,
we've
that's
got some,
certainly a real possibility, and I would not dismiss that at all. You know, They're also trying to produce this ridiculous narrative too, like, you know, we need to fight Putin here so we don't fight him in a world war, and that's absolutely ridiculous, you know.
No.
The most dumbest thing I'd ever heard, and it's from this idiot in Indiana or something like that, or Maryland. There is no face off with Russia, okay? It's done. You know, we thought the sanctions would hurt. I mean, it did. But, you know, really the best thing for everybody, really, is to get together and say, you know, he's got an arrest warrant for him. Put $1 billion bounty on his head. His own FSB will turn him in. Problem solved.
Oh, Putin? Well, actually, you know, it's interesting. Let's look at history for a little bit here. Because, you know, back after World War II, the Russians crossed all through Eastern Europe and basically destroyed the eastern half of Germany. The Allies, Britain, France, and the United States, came in from the other side with the Normandy invasion and kicked the western half of Germany. And so they met kind of in the middle, and there was almost a Patton wanted to go with Russia and said, look, you better kick these people all the way back to Russia, or we're going to have to fight them someday in the future. And he was absolutely right. But nobody wanted to have a war with Russia as soon as World War II was over. And I agree with that.
No, that
so
would
what happened
be
was,
really stupid.
Really stupid. Yeah, well, I mean, World War II could have been prevented by not going into World War I. We'll talk about that later. But the way Europe divided. Yeah. So we agree on that, too. It's interesting. So Europe divided into Western Europe, which became NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, and Eastern Europe divided into the Warsaw Pact.
Warsaw Pact.
Right. So and between them was the Iron Curtain, as Churchill described it. So the Warsaw Pact, the difference with them was they weren't voluntary. NATO was voluntary. They joined. Warsaw Pact.
Yeah.
You know, Poland, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, and it's now that's been split, Romania, Bulgaria, all these countries, Moldova, you know, they didn't do this voluntarily. They were invaded. You know, Stalin went in. He didn't go back after World War II. He kept them, you know, and then they went in the 50s if they got bad, like Hungary. The tanks rolled into Hungary in the 50s. Said, look, you're all communist states. So the Eastern European states were held by force. The Western European states volunteered to join NATO. And that was a stalemate.
Yeah.
Now, when Russia collapsed, when the Soviet Union collapsed and the Warsaw Pact collapsed with it, Russia did not when the government of Russia reformed, the Russian Federation, they did not go back and recapture those Eastern European countries. They left them alone. And the deal was keep NATO where it is, don't expand, and we're not going to worry about you because we got this whole buffer zone of all these Eastern European countries. So the reason we have this conflict now, as I see it, is because NATO reneged on that deal. This is the way the world was. You've got NATO, you've got Russia, and you've got a big buffer zone of Eastern European countries, the former Warsaw Pact. And Russia said, look, you don't go into these countries, we're good. That's our buffer zone. We're cool. Because Russia was invaded by Hitler, Napoleon, and Bismarck, if I remember my history. So Russia was invaded three times, lost literally 20 million people in World War II. So they're serious about this. And so the smartest thing to do was to say, okay, good deal. We'll keep NATO. We'll keep NATO in the current countries. We're not going to expand it. We're not going to go to Turkey. We're not going to go to Scandinavia. We're certainly not going to go to Ukraine. That'd be the worst mistake. We're just going to keep NATO as it is at the former border of the Iron Curtain. That would have solved this. But they didn't do that because they wanted a war. Make sense?
I accept your argument as cogent, but I don't know if I accept your premises per se.
Okay, that's fine. Which one?
But regardless, we're in it right now, and I think the only real solution is just to put a bounty on the guy's head and let him, you know, he'll spend the rest of his life in jail, presumably.
Who, Zelensky or Putin?
No, Putin.
Why? Why him?
Because he's wanted for war crimes by the international I forget the thing. It's the international
court. How about
Zelensky?
How about the war crimes that Zelensky and the
That's the other thing too. If
so who's
Zelensky
the good person
is
here?
Not investigated, it would be a serious miscarriage of justice because there's a lot of reports. I mean, it's obviously on Russian TV, but they're saying that the Russian soldiers who are captured are not treated well either. You know, their teeth are pulled. They're all kinds. It's messed up. They're tortured in very nasty ways. And you're not supposed to torture soldiers once they're captured.
No, Geneva Convention.
They surrender.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. You keep them in a prison camp return them after the war's over.
They go to a nice little camp and,
wait
everything out.
They're not nice, but, but they're habitable.
Habitable.
In fact, look at World War II. If you were in a Gestapo camp, you were tortured and killed and interrogated. But if you're in a Luftwaffe, if you were shot down, if you're like an Air Force pilot or a gunner shot down, you ended up in Luftwaffe camp. It wasn't pleasant. It was freezing cold because they didn't care. But you weren't tortured. You weren't treated horribly. You're just treated badly. Okay. But prisoners of war usually are treated badly. But it was survivable. And so it all depended on where you were. And the same thing goes with this. We see there are no good people here. I mean, this is like those states we talked about earlier, the former Yugoslavia. They've been enemies for centuries. This goes back. And
that's
the idea that we're going to, we're going to go.
That's a great point, Greg.
Go ahead.
That really is. Because, the thing is, both these countries are dirtbags. The thing is, the Ukrainians have like a slight, maybe 3 degrees of separation in that they have the moral high ground and that they were invaded. But they have their drawbacks too. There's also there's a torturing, there's the Azimovs, Nazi battalions that are roaming around in the countryside doing the country's nasty business and, being able to hide from prosecution because they're not like Ukrainian soldiers. There was the patent racism that they exhibited when people were trying to leave the country. They made black people wait for all the white people to leave first.
Wait. In Ukraine, how many black people in Ukraine? I mean, you got two. Russia's mostly white and Ukraine's mostly white. I mean, they're almost exclusively white. They're white countries. World War II was fought in Europe.
There are
white
some
people.
Black people there. I don't know how I don't know why they go to Ukraine. And the same way is I don't know why like Chinese exchange students end up in North Dakota, but they do.
Well,
it's like, how do you even know about North Dakota? Most Americans don't know about North Dakota, somehow you found yourself there.
Let me tell you a story. Let me tell you a story. We had a call from Beijing, China. We had a student call us from Beijing. It's the only time I've had a call from China. China's listened to us since we started the show. It's true. Beijing call came in. We had a great chat. Now, this is someone who spoke English, went to American universities. Mm-hmm. I'm sure was here to steal technology. That's what most of the folks are here for. But he talked about, he says, too many guns in America. I like it. It's nice and safe in China. I said, really? It's only safe because everybody's completely oppressed. There's no freedom. You know, guns bring freedom. Give me freedom to carry a gun and take care of my own safety in a country where I have freedom and I can go where I want. I can drive where I want, at least we used to, over Chinese communism any day. So we had a really interesting discussion. Never heard from him again. Never heard from anybody from China again. I mean, that wasn't monitored.
Yeah, I know. I guess the CCP had their say and then it was time to move on. I forget how where we got off on that, but the racism in Ukraine.
Racism in Ukraine, yeah.
And you know, possible torturing of Russian soldiers, but you know they've definitely got Putin on that, and he needs to go. The guy is a menace, and you know really it's the same problem that it is here. You have this oligarch structure that just you know thinks they can do whatever they want. The world is just their playground. And we really need to, you know, take them down a few pegs.
It's up to us. It's up to us to remove our oligarch, war class, neocons. It's up to Russia if they want to remove Putin. It's not to do it. It wasn't up to us to remove Saddam Hussein, even though he was a terrible person, or Assad in Syria, or any of these dictators out there.
Well, yeah, I agree with you in principle. The thing is that, you know, anybody who couldn't see this, you know, thing with Putin, you know, was, you know, obviously not paying attention because you have a man who's a consummate egomaniac. And
well,
on top of that,
why that going around?
Yeah, I know. And on top, you add that kind of machismo with all the money that he has and power and influence. Something had to give at some point because he pretty much rules with an iron fist over Russia. He just had to have some more land.
Well, I'd be curious.
That's how these things work. Greed never stops feeding.
Yeah. How open is their economy? In fact, I'll get Marco.
They're a free market economy.
Right, yeah.
They're a free market economy. So go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, well, I got Marco listening in the Netherlands. He'll be able to tell us about this. We need to talk about this next week. But how free is Russia? I'd be curious. I don't know because I haven't really said. Under communism, obviously, there was no freedom. But once we had Gorbachev, once they opened up, Glasnost, Perestroika, that kind of stuff, became a different country. Now it's the Russian Federation. It's a completely different place. Now, is it still autocratic, you know, and having an oligarchy? I'm sure it does. It's Russia. You know, they've gone from czars to communist leaders. So the people are not used to freedom. So I don't think it's a free country, but it's still up to all right, Marco, you take care over there. He types in. That's fine. But I don't think it's as bad as people say, you know, because you know, I don't know. But we need to find it out. But here's the thing, though. It's not up to us to remove Putin. It's not. Because if that were the case, then it would be up to Russia to remove one of our presidents. We don't want that either. So you got to look at it from the other side.
Mm.
So here's the question, though. Here's the big question that I want to ask.
Yeah.
Our war class, the neocons, the military-industrial complex, the bankers, the people that create these wars for their own profit, they knew ahead of time that Ukraine could never defeat Russia. They knew it. Every military was basically... Right. So given
just
the fact
that they... Just be a money pit of munitions and technology and weapons. Yeah, it just never ends.
Okay.
I mean,
so
that's
they
what
knew.
They like. What they're trying to do is what they did in the 80s, which was, you know, outspend the Russians. But that was the arms race. This is slightly
different.
This is over territory, you know.
Well, how much territory? And, they got Crimea, which was traditionally Russian anyway, during the Obama administration. The actual area that Russia has invaded, it was really just along the western front, so to speak, or the western edge of the country. The eastern side of the country, which was ethnically Russian anyway. They had more in common with Russia than they had in common with Ukraine, with ethnic Ukrainians.
Yeah.
You know, so Ukraine split down the middle by something called the Dnieper River. So the Dnieper, you know, pretty much the middle goes through Kiev. It's not Kiev, it's Kiev.
Yeah.
And so you've got the eastern half is more Russian, the western half is more German. So, you know, there's no good people here. Henry Kissinger, remember what Henry Kissinger said about the war between Iran and Iraq? Remember his famous quote?
Earlier in the morning for me.
Oh, sorry. He said the only problem with the war with Iraq and Iran is that we can only have one loser.
Hmm.
So he didn't care who won. Now, he's pretty disgusting in that regard. But in other words, the thing was that he knew there wasn't going to be a winner. he knew, you know, and everybody knows, anybody who analyzes this knows that Ukraine could never beat Russia in a war. Never.
No.
So the people that funded it knew that also. See, that's the evil, all right? That's the real evil to me.
And that's what a lot of some of the Republicans are saying right now too, is like, you know, we need a game plan here, not just, you know, keep throwing money at the problem and hope that you know, something happens. Because, you know, Russia's never going to give. And, you know, the Ukraine is basically trying to fight, you know, an enemy that is way beyond them in numbers and, mm-hmm. and even technology. And they're just toying with them right now. If they really wanted to get serious, they'd bomb the shit out of Kiev and, you know, march troops over there.
They could have invaded the whole country, taken it over, and evicted the Lobachevsky government, whatever, the Zelensky government. And they could have, I mean, they're so corrupt. I mean, they, you know, Zelensky's wife goes to Paris for shopping.
Yeah,
you know, they're
40
taking, they're siphoning
grand,
off.
Cry boo-hoo.
Yeah, they're siphoning off billions of dollars of our taxpayer money, just like the Kuwaitis did when we were, you know, at war in Iraq to save Kuwait from, you know, slant drilling and things like that. The Kuwaitis were on the Mediterranean. They were in the Riviera. You know, the Zelensky folks, you know, the families are socking away billions and billions of dollars. They're stealing. They're not using it to fight the war. They don't care about the war. They just care about making money.
That's exactly what I'm saying. I mean, that's what Russia did at first. Remember, Russia came in all the way and actually took the Kiev airport, right? And
yeah, I think so. That makes sense, though. Yeah. And then they backed off. They don't have it now.
And then they back off, and it was just to show them what they could do. It's like, look, if we were really serious,
mm-hmm. yeah,
you know, we tear right through your country like a piece of tissue paper. Yeah.
So Putin's been really restrained from what he could do, and I think people forget
that. Yeah, he has been very restrained.
Yeah, he just wants his territory.
He wants his territory, but he also wants the support of the people. You're not going to get a lot of support if you start killing their friends and family, you know, in other parts of the country.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why he did what he did. He's like, okay, I'm just going to take the airport, and then he did launch some weapons against Kiev too.
Yes.
And it just shows, like, look, you know, I can take this whole country if I want to. You know, if mm-hmm. you want to do this whole, like, you know, cat and mouse thing, you know, with Crimea, well, I guess
it's Russia
can do that.
They don't mind huge loss of life. I mean, they lived through huge loss of life. Plus, their nuclear weapons in Belarus. Mm-hmm. And we have listeners in Belarus, by the way. I'm hoping one will call in sometime or type in on live chat.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, it'd be great. But I would love to get a contact in Belarus just to find out, you know, what's going on the ground there. But Belarus is Russian sympathetic. They've got Russian nuclear weapons, tactical nukes in Belarus right now. And we know that, you know, and we know that Russia would use them if we armed Ukraine with some of the most advanced weapons we have. So this is why this is so stupid.
Well, tactical nukes aren't as bad as people think. I mean, it's not like the big mushroom cloud that, you know, tears open a city. But they're certainly very accurate and very, very destructive.
Mm-hmm.
And not to mention the radioactive fallout as well.
Well, that's been taken care of. Peter Pratt told us all about the fifth generation nuclear weapons. They're small, low yield, low radiation. They're just very, you know, the bang for the buck. They're much cheaper than conventional weapons.
Much cheaper.
So they have artillery shells that have small nuclear bombs inside them. You know, this is very miniaturized now. So the fourth and fifth generation nuclear weapons are extremely accurate, extremely low yield. They'll blow up a bridge or, you know, take out half a city or something like that, or take out a whole bunch of troops. But the radiation, that's changed. It's not the old dirty bombs, the old mushroom clouds, the ICBMs. It's not Dr. Strangelove anymore.
Well, great. That's good news for somebody, I guess. But,
yeah,
you know,
but
the thing is that World War III is not acceptable, period.
No.
And if, you know, and if the president tries to, you know, steer us towards that, you know, I don't think he'll survive the day. I think his own Secret Service might put a bullet in his head or something. I mean, nobody wants.
No, I don't think it's that bad. But I
World
think
War
III. I always hesitate to associate anytime we talk about somebody who's in the White House with violence, just because people can take things out of context. If the party 25th amended Brandon, because he could start a war and not know it.
Mm.
Because
absolutely.
He can't he can't distinguish between movies and real life. He has no concept of reality. So the biggest danger right now is that he would do something not knowing what he's doing, or thinking that it's not real, or thinking that it is real when it isn't. So he has no judgment.
That's what I said last time. He can be a very dangerous man in that office. Nobody really seems to appreciate it. They think they can handle him and get him to do what they want him to do. The military doesn't check with his staff before, you know, once the president gives some orders, they're bound to follow them, or they'll
convicted
of treason or something.
Right. Well, no, it's not treason, but it would be disobeying orders, and it would be
it's not a good thing for them.
No, it's
court-martial. Very, very bad thing. Yeah.
So why the Democrat Party tolerate this guy there? What function does he serve?
He functions to keep Bernie Sanders out.
That's it?
He functions to do, because that's the one everybody wanted to be president, was Bernie Sanders, because he was actually going to do the things that Democrats are supposed to do, and Biden was just going to be like a seat warmer for the Uniparty. So he seeks it to keep Bernie Sanders out. It's the narrative that he keeps Trump out is complete malarkey, because the thing is, every poll, every one that was done, said the only person who could beat Donald Trump was Bernie Sanders.
I was just going to ask you that.
That was really.
Yeah, that would have been a great election. No, I was just going to ask you, do you think that Bernie Sanders could beat Donald Trump? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So why go with Hillary then?
The party won't let him get that far.
Why did the Democrats go with Hillary then? Because she's deep state?
For the same reason, because Biden wasn't really an answer that they wanted.
Okay.
And the only candidate who could possibly pull some support away was pull some support away from Bernie Sanders was Hillary Clinton.
Okay.
Same ridiculous meme. And the whole thing is falling on. The whole house of cards is falling down. You know, they're trying to figure out what, you know, how to back out of this and how to get Biden out of this without him, you know, pulling the copper wiring out of the walls as he leaves the building.
Would Kamala Harris taking over for the balance of his term, let's say the Democrats, you know, did the 25th Amendment and they removed Biden, with her taking over, do you think that would be better or worse for the Democrat Party?
It would be a zero sum, really. Some things would be better, a lot of things would be worse. I mean, it's pretty much, you know, not so well kept secret that's a non-starter for the Democrats.
Okay.
So I was kind of thinking to myself over the weekend, like, you know, well, you know, they could still offer her a job back, you know, in
as
California.
As vice president again? Oh.
No, as senator.
Attorney general?
You know?
Senator, okay.
Yeah, they could offer her old job back and then appoint somebody else and then have Biden resign. That's the way I probably would have done it. They could still do that. They can make her some sort of an offer for something like ambassador to some country where she can just live out her days or something like that. seriously, that's
she's
not Pelosi's, you know, exit strategy. She can't live in San Francisco. They hate her guts.
Bermuda.
So, you know, make her not some offer, away. Get her out of the vice presidency. Then, you know, nominate somebody who, you know, would be good for everybody, and then have Biden resign or 25th Amendment, whatever you want to do. I would think that's their strategy. I don't think they trust the people who would be administering that situation enough to have that fall through. So now they're trying to scramble to figure out, well, you know, maybe we'll let them get impeached or there's a bunch of other things. But it's a huge mess, just like we talked about before. It's a huge, huge mess. And it's just getting worse for them with the criminal probes and his ever-deteriorating health. He might even just die in office, which would be the worst thing for everybody. And I think that was even God giving us a test run with Feinstein is, you know.
Yeah.
You know, look, get them to resign so you can work on your terms and your timetable, rather than have to scramble and have some unpleasantness, you know, take over in the meantime.
Huh.
So, you know, it's very possible that Biden could just drop dead one day. And then it's an automatic Kamala
Harris.
Well,
he's had two brain aneurysms, and his mental state is declining constantly. He's getting worse. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
It's only a matter of time before he won't be able to function at all. And that's sad, but that doesn't excuse the fact that, but you can't be in the presidency, you can't be in the White House with that kind of, you can't have your finger on the nuclear button if you're not mentally competent.
No.
You know, so Kamala Harris would be mentally competent, but she'd be terrible, you know, so it would, and that would, I think, would hurt the Democrats even more. So you need to find a way, or I guess, sorry, you're just hoping that Brandon hangs on through the election and loses, or what?
Well,
who's going to run? Who's going to run in are the Democrats going
Joe
with
Kennedy.
Robert Kennedy. Okay, so now what if he runs as an independent?
Well, that's what the supposed announcement is going to be on the 9th. And I think it'll be good for him. You know, I've often thought about it myself.
But why are the Democrats rallying around him? You know, he's like the epitome.
They're not really
Democrat.
Rallying because it's the same deal. They think he'll split the vote or something, then Trump will get elected.
No, not
it's
as
all
an independent, but as a Democrat.
Nonsense.
You know, he would
that's
be
what
a
I mean.
Great.
That's what
yeah,
I'm
he's
saying.
White.
That's why they've
so
been trying
the Democrats
to disparage him.
Him.
There's, they're still pushing this narrative of Biden, and they're so stupid. I can't think. They're unbelievably stupid. And, you know, that's why they call it the Beltway, because, you know, you get sheltered and you think life is just your own, the paradigms that, you know, work in Washington. When
the
in
nation
fact,
of government.
You know, you have to get the country to sign off on these things before you can do these things. So those pesky, you know, unwashed masses have to unfortunately have their say. And their say may not be what you like them to say. So we got to end on that because I got to run to another call here.
Okay, that's fine. This has been fun because we want to talk
let
about
Let me just plug my next.
Yes, please do. Go
let
ahead.
Me just plug Steve here. So our next week's show, we're going to be having MAGA Mega Man, Steve Stern, also known as the Flag Guy. He's a regular on Steve Bannon's show and, OAN, Real America, all those good MAGA outlets. And we're going to have him on. Next time, maybe somebody else, too. I don't know if Raj is going to come in on the call, too, but it's going to be fun. In the meantime...
I'll do one
at
a time. One is generally better because we can really talk to them. But if you have another person, that's good. But I like one guest because you and I are both going to have questions, and that's three people. And you get more than that, it starts getting complicated. But Steve Stern's going to be fascinating. I want to find out how you two met and connected. I mean, I've got lots of questions, so but we'll get that. You got to go. Okay. So websites... Facebook pages, anything, and we'll do it next week.
Okay. So my Facebook, you can see the Progressive Report. I might have to search the Real Progressive Report. My campaign page, BiancaForSanFrancisco.org. Please donate if you hate Nancy Pelosi. Don't make excuses. Now is the time to act. $20 gets you on the SEC database and a report that Nancy Pelosi looks at. And when she sees all these arrows of money coming from all over the country, she's really going to feel that hate. So let's make her feel that hate. Please donate, BiancaForSanFrancisco.org. Just hit the red give button, and it'll take you there. It's been great, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, Bianca. Great report.
Thank you.
All right. So I'm done. This has been an amazing day. And so all the folks that were here, so my own rant for my hour, Bonnie, we'll be back next week. Bianca, fabulous as always. And again, it's interesting, you know, it continually amazes me how much we do agree on. It's really quite fascinating. We had Bill to start and then Wendy. And then this has been a great day. So anyway, we'll do it all again tomorrow. Tomorrow, I'm not sure what's going to happen. We've got a couple of hours free in the morning, so this might be time to play some old interviews or try some different things. I don't know. We've got CJ with the Wellness Watch in the last hour at 9 o'clock, so we'll talk to her. And then it's going to be fun. Friday's packed. We have our two new gun reporters, Candy Petticord and John DeMonico, in the 8 o'clock hour, so they're going to have half an hour each. And so Friday's going to be cool. We're starting off with Tara D and the Animal Shelter Report. We've got Derek Park and the Financial Report. We've got our two gun reporters, Candy and John. And then we've got a special guest on Friday, Andy Ross. Andy Ross is another big conservative, so we're going to talk to him as well. Busy week. Well, thanks, Susan. Of course, remember our legislation, writeyourlaws.com. And I will talk to you all tomorrow, 7 a.m. Central Time, when we do it all again. Thank you.